Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would like to ask folks to please, if you have electronic devices, to silence them. Remind you that the exits are in the back corner on the stairs and the front corner over here to my left. I wonder if you folks would please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Can we have the roll call, please?
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Clairborn?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler? Mr. Stein? Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present?
Actually, I wasn't called.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Welcome, Will. I think I see a coat on Peter's chair, so maybe
he's here somewhere.
He's around. He's around somewhere. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We will be reordering tonight's agenda slightly. The presentation with respect to the Ellis Hollow Road colored shoulders will not take place. I have a happy task today, and that is to recognize some of our county employees who have gone above and beyond. We all know that there was a real problem in Fall Creek and Cascadilla Creeks 2 weeks ago, and it was very close to having substantial flooding because of the ice jams in those creeks. The city of Ithaca crews were out there, but so were volunteers and people from our public works and other departments that came to the aid and did things the way intermunicipal cooperation ought to be handled. And we're very proud of the fact that they did that and lended assistance where it was needed. And I'd like to just mention some of those for you tonight. Certainly in the highway department, Jeff Smith, our director of highways, Matt Whittemore, the senior highway crew supervisor, Tom Jacobs, the highway crew supervisor, Jarmar Redmond, motor equipment operator, Mike Piatti, heavy equipment operator, Wayne Lauper, heavy equipment operator, Willie Vandemark, heavy equipment operator, Rick Baker, heavy equipment operator, and Scott Metcalf, heavy equipment operator. Other people helped, other departments assisted as well. Certainly our health department was there when the need arose. And staff assisted with door-to-door information and the education process in the neighborhoods of Ithaca. Our thanks to Frank Krupa, the director of our health department. He was stationed at the city's Emergency Operations Center all Friday and Saturday. Eric Scher, public health sanitarian. Pat Jebbett, WIC program nutritionist. Sarah Caputi, public health sanitarian. Salas Hollis, project assistant. And in administration, we want to give a nod to Marsha Lynch, who assisted with public information. And she was stationed at the city's Emergency Operations Center all of Friday and Saturday. And in the Department of Emergency Response, Beth Harrington provided general assistance to the city's Emergency Operations Center. She was stationed there all Friday and Saturday. Our emergency director, Lee Shurtleff, was on call throughout, and certainly our county administrator was out there for us as well. So I wonder if we might have a round of applause to Thank you. Jim Dennis.
Michael, I would just like to add, and I apologize if I miss anyone. I believe Kathy Herrera and Nate Shinagawa were very active in that effort on Saturday. If anyone else was from the ledge, please raise your hand. I'm sorry, but I did know about this too.
Well, thanks to Nate and Kathy for that, and you certainly need to be recognized. There were a lot of political people from the city and the county that were out there, and but I think the folks in the trenches are the ones that we need to thank certainly as much. We have a new employee to introduce tonight. And I believe Brian Wilbur is joining us tonight to introduce our new Communications Center manager. Brian?
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here to do this, to make this introduction. Some of you may recall that I have been working in interim capacity with the county's Department of Emergency Response for 2 years and 10 months. Not counting or anything. And a good share of that time was spent by a number of people in the recruitment and selection process for my replacement. And I'm really happy to report that that was time well spent. I have with me tonight our new Communications Center manager. Her name is Christina Dravis. She's been on the job. She's in her third week now on the job. And she comes well-credentialed, with excellent experience, and is hitting the ground running. And all of that makes me smile, and most of the time I can't stop. So it's all good. And so without further ado, I would like to introduce Christina.
Welcome, Christina. If you'd like to say anything, you're welcome to.
I just want to thank you for selecting me. It's been a great 2.5 weeks so far. Everybody's been very welcoming. I love living in Ithaca so far, even though I'm still staying at the Homewood Suites. But they have free food. So I think I'm really going to enjoy working here, and it's nice seeing all of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Christina, you're taking on a very important job for our county. We thank you. Another happy thing to do tonight, and that is I'm happy to reappoint our poet laureate, Tish Perlman. Tish has been recommended to us again by the Community Arts Partnership. I see John Spence out there. And Tish, I hope you would come forward and favor us with a poetical rendition tonight.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be back here. I've had a wonderful year as poet laureate. The highlight was giving a four-week workshop for the children and the elders who come to GIAC, and it was just a magical 4 weeks, watching their imaginations open up and watch their creativity just fly around the room. It was really a highlight of my first year. Next year, I already am going to be speaking and reading at Elmira College for the nursing students about my medical experience, which is what my first chapbook was about. So I have many things planned for this year again, and it is going to be another wonderful experience. I love opening up people's minds to poetry and getting them thinking about creativity. The world is full of so much crap, so it's really nice to still be able to stay tied to the creative arts. I'm going to read you one poem today. It's a poem about history, and it's a poem about remembering, and I started looking into some of my ancestors a few years ago, and I found out my great-great-great-grandfather, my Dutch grandfather, was in the Civil War, and so I found out all this really interesting information, and I wrote this poem, and it has to do with history, and it has to do with what you do, because history and the future will come back and take take part in what you're doing today. This is called In the Distance. I sense a homesickness for a place hidden inside my marrow, a lighthouse with the eyes of my ancestors longing for a glimpse of landfall. I know I have wandered the lush fields of Ireland and felt the spray of the North Sea off the coast of the Netherlands, on the lookout for a new world in a time that does not change. I am homesick for a place I never inhabited, on a pilgrimage deep inside the landscape of stillness. An age long past sleeps in me, ghosting my skin. Thank you, and thank you for this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Tish. And if anyone doesn't know what a poet laureate does, in our folders last week, there was a list of everything that Tish has done for us over the past year. And we hope she's as energetic and helps with all of those things and makes all those appearances again in 2014. We appreciate it. It's time now for privilege of the floor for the public. I'll remind folks that you're welcome to speak about anything that you would like. If we have blue cards, we will call on those folks first, but that doesn't mean if you haven't given one that we won't speak to you or you won't give you time to speak as well. Sorry. And the first blue card I have tonight is from Todd Sadler. And if you could just tell us what municipality you're from and go to either mic and speak, please.
Hi. I live in the city of Ithaca and a couple blocks from here. And my house didn't get flooded because of the good work of the county employees. So I sent a letter to the members of the legislature last week and to the sheriff about the hiring of Stephen Morocco as a deputy sheriff in 2011. And that happened while there was an open question about his alleged mistreatment of a gay woman in an arrest in 2009. A group of us met with the district attorney yesterday and discussed this case, and I want to thank Ms. Wilkinson for answering our questions and say I feel more or less satisfied by her explanation of why she did not proceed with the prosecution of Mr. Morocco based on the evidence she was able to gather about the incident. I learned yesterday that there was not enough evidence to prove the allegations against Mr. Morocco beyond a reasonable doubt, but I did not leave that meeting with anything like certainty that the accusations were completely without basis. So I still have serious concern about the hiring of Mr. Morocco as a deputy sheriff. I think the burden of proof is different for finding someone guilty of a crime and for deciding on whether or not to hire them as a public servant. Deputy Morocco still needs to be either cleared of the accusation of wrongdoing so that all our community members can feel safe calling the sheriff's department, or else they need to know that this man is no longer a deputy sheriff. So I would also like to speak briefly about the question of jail expansion. The one time I was arrested here in Ithaca, I was released on my own recognizance for trespassing and obstructing government administration. But when I appeared in court, I noticed there were several people that came before me to the judge that had been incarcerated for some amount of time. And one of these was an African-American man who was accused of shoplifting one beer, which was returned unopened to the shop owner. And apparently he had been incarcerated for some amount of time because of that. So I don't know all the ins and outs and requirements of the jail situation, but it seems like there's still room for more alternatives and less incarceration here in Tompkins County. And I'd like to hand in my comments so they can be in the record.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Sadler. Next I have Lisa Morocco.
I'm from the village of Trumansburg. So my name is Lisa Morocco, and like others in this room, I'm mad as hell. I'm almost too angry to speak. Stephen Morocco is my brother, and I'm gay. I'm angry because until now I've kept silent. I've not stood up and told the community what a sweet, caring, and non-homophobic man my brother is. I've stood by and listened to the public as the public has judged my brother by the words of one gay woman whose judgment and perhaps memory was impaired that night. As another gay woman, let me tell you about my brother Stephen. Our mother worked at Cornell our entire childhood and up until the time she retired. We were exposed to diversity early. She raised us to treat everyone equally and with respect. Black, white, male, female, brown, red, gay, straight, whoever, it didn't matter. This was non-negotiable. My wife, Debbie, and I are starting our 20th year together. Stephen has been involved in our lives throughout this entire time. From the moment I first introduced Deb to Stephen, and he took us for a ride in his new truck, he has been involved. Thanksgiving and Christmas gatherings, he has been involved. The birth of our new granddaughters, he has been involved. Deb and I were invited to witness his wedding. Stephen was there to witness Deb and my wedding, and there he is proudly posing for the family wedding photos with his arm around Debbie, not me, Debbie.
1 minute.
It was the first legal gay wedding in Truensburg. Quite the event. Drew quite a lot of attention for that small, sleepy village. For those of you who say that Stephen is homophobic, I say you are mistaken. Stephen's record for the past 20 years is exemplary. Our youngest daughter had an apartment in downtown Ithaca. Whenever she and her gay or straight friends needed help, they called on Uncle Stephen. Not once has he ever been disrespectful of our sexual orientation. He has never called me a dyke, lesbo, lezzy, not even in jest. No other derogatory name. Stephen has never, ever, ever shown any homophobic actions, attitudes, tendencies, period. That's not the way we were raised. That's not his way. That's not Stephen Morocco. Thank you.
Thank you. Debbie Miller Morocco. I think I failed to mention that Kathy Covert, our clerk, does try to keep time and has a sign when the minutes come up and when the time is up to help folks pace themselves.
My name is Debbie Miller Morocco. I am here to make a statement on behalf of Stephen Morocco. I've known Stephen for approximately 20 years, as I have been in a domestic partnership and now in marriage with his sister, Lisa. On June 5th, 2011, our lives in the Morocco family dramatically changed. Lisa had a massive heart attack and was in cardiac arrest twice. While the immediate family and close friends gathered in the hospital waiting room, Stephen was there as well. He met me in the hall, hugged me, and stayed at the hospital as often and as much as he could during the three-day stay. I, too, am angry. I'm angry at myself for not coming forward sooner. But more than that, I'm angered by those, whether from this legislature of Tompkins County or from the LGBT community, that anyone would justify one person's accusations and form an opinion based and consider that and based on that information alone. On July 30th, 2011, Lisa and I were married. We received numerous gifts from friends and family. But out of all the gifts we received, one of our most favorite and treasured were these three framed pieces given to us by Stephen. The first being our wedding announcement, The second being a framed article from the Ithaca Journal showing that Lisa and I were among the first to apply for our marriage licenses in Tompkins County. And the third and probably most cherished is a copy of the document of the New York State's passage of the Marriage Equality Act. So for anyone to stand and accuse Stephen of being homophobic or to imply that he hates homosexuals or is in any way unkind or shows malice in any way, form, or fashion is not just mistaken. They are totally wrong. That's what infuriates me more than anything, and therefore that becomes nothing more than an unjustified harassment by people that know nothing about Stephen Morocco. And I'm shaking, and I'm sorry.
It's all right.
I can't even open it.
It's okay.
I am here on my own free will, and out of nothing more for you to know that there is and always will be two sides to every story. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have Deborah Chipola Dennis.
Hi, Deborah Cipolla Dennis from Freeville, and I have four points to make tonight, so I'll go really quickly so I don't get the hook. First of all, I want to encourage all of you to go Sunday night to Cinemopolis and see the movie The Throwaways. It premiered last night, and it was a wonderful event, packed house. It's a wonderful production. Some important information there about what happens to people when they come out of the prison system and how difficult it is for them to try to make a living and try to, you know, come back in and be productive in the society that has now labeled them a felon and therefore they're a throwaway. So I encourage you to go and watch that movie. It was great. And then I have a couple of pieces of information that I'd like to pass along, and I'll give this to the clerk. The first one is a article that came out, I think it came out actually before Christmas, but this one came out at early January, about the solar plans for Minnesota. Minnesota, an administrative law judge in Minnesota for the Public Utilities Commission, which is similar to our PSC, has found that solar power is more economical than natural gas, and it shows all the documents and the study behind that. And so Minnesota is now putting their efforts behind solar power instead of natural gas, and they have ordered that their coal power plants be closed and that solar farms be installed instead of repowering with natural gas. So it's something we should look at. I think Ithaca probably gets about as much sun as Minnesota, so that should work here. And the next thing is an article about Utah. Utah is 9 years into a program where it's called Housing First, and it is to eliminate homelessness by 2015, and they are on target to do that in 10 years. They have now reduced their homelessness rate by 74% in the 9 years, and they expect that they will meet this. And it's a very simple program. They basically put people in apartments, no questions asked. You need a house, you need a place to live, they put you in an apartment. And this is, economically, this has been a really great decision for them. They find that it costs annually about a little more than $16,000 a year to support a homeless person, whereas they can put that same person into an apartment for $11,000 a year. So economically, it makes a lot of sense. This is at a state level, and I realize that if we wanted to look at something at this at a local level, it would be a different model, but maybe it's something that we should advocate for at the state level as well. And then the last thing is about the jail expansion. I just want to say, you know, I want you guys, I'm going to continue to put pressure on this. We should not be expanding this jail. We need to find other methods and things like investing in green energy and reducing homelessness will help with how many people actually should be incarcerated.
Thank you. Joanne Cipolla Dennis.
Hi, good evening, Joanne Cipolla-Dennis. I want to support the one-year moratorium that Jamie Hendricks spent quite a lot of time drafting. I had the pleasure of actually had two great meetings this week. One was with Sheriff Lansing, and one was with DA Gwen Wilkinson, who I did see someplace in here tonight. Those meetings were really instrumental in finding out some questions that I had, both about the expansion, which actually Sheriff Lansing has some ideas that would reduce the population, and was quite stunned at the plan itself, and in particular the amount that was spent in the roof, which we could bring down. So this one-year moratorium would give us time to assess real, credible, update information that we have in order to move forward, so please support that. I really appreciate the Morocco family for coming out here tonight. It took a good deal of courage for you to do that, and I appreciate it. I do want you to know that we do want to know who your brother is, so please know that. I spoke with DA and the sheriff this week. I guess it was most productive dialogues we've had. Both the sheriff and the DA agreed that until arrestees and officers are both protected by full surveillance of all police engagements, we will likely add to accusations leading to more lawsuits. An emerging pattern of citizens being forced to sue police, the city, and county for brutality, false arrests, and civil rights violations, as evidenced in two cases closing recently, the Crockford and Dennis case, in the last 4 years. I requested the DA to seek a remedy in that pattern and to apply a special investigation, and she agreed to begin looking into that pattern. Taxpayers seem to be spending a lot of money paying for behavior that we will not tolerate through insurance premiums of lawsuits, not to mention more obvious, more important abuses of power. Sheriff Lansing is very aware of the public outrage at his hire of Mr. Morocco while still under allegation of serious crime, who has not publicly denied these crimes and has not been cleared as innocent, although he may be. Sheriff Lansing took full responsibility and agrees to address this. He's one of the few police officers in the state of New York who willfully opens his file for public use. I really commend him for doing that. People who hide nothing have nothing to hide, and therefore they do open their file. I did that with my file when I was in corrections. Public servants work for us. Citizens should never fear potential exposure to homophobic or racist officers when needing their critical services, as they are entitled to and pay for those services. Citizens should never feel that they meet a potential risk or threat to their own safety to call a police officer because personal biases and disrespect of their civil rights of certain groups of people may be evident. If those groups are viewed not to deserve civil rights, how does an officer intend to preserve and protect them in the first place? I ask for assessment by independent physicians to be administered to our forces to establish beyond any doubt potential liabilities and risk, and to be assured that potential threats and liabilities to public safety and threats to civil rights are eliminated once determined. And I know that each one of you cares about this situation. The problem is that this didn't come to trial, and we don't know who this man is. We would like to. We need to find out.
Your time has expired.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Next we have Jamie Hendricks.
Good evening. I'm here to discontinue talking about the jail expansion project, and specifically just to submit, on behalf of the coalition, a request just for a one-year moratorium on any decision-making related to the jail, just any time, but also any monies, and especially the monies we're thinking about. And just when we looked at your presentation of December 9th, and again, that was a wonderful presentation. That was an excellent presentation. I'm a former teacher, so I was grading you. And you got A+. We looked at that, and we noticed opportunities for improvement. And the most important one that was springing out, as Tim Joseph confirmed in his memo later on, was the issue of re-entry and the issue of recidivism, that we can do more about this. And so I'm highlighting one point on which we can work, but there are a couple of other points, like the sheriff who has agreed to organize and investigate how to set up something to train the magistrates, like something that's happening in Cortland already. So that's another way we can reduce the population. I'm going to stop here talking about the jail expansion. I'm going to submit this request to the chair, and you all will get a request in your mailbox also, and also a personal invitation so that we can learn from you how we can help you better to redirect our energies. And then I would like to do a special thank you to Lisa Marocco and her spouse for being here and for speaking up. I didn't know anything about this case except what was in the Ithaca Journal, and that was like very obviously biased in some way, and so I'm really grateful, and I hope we can continue talking at the end of this meeting to find a way to find a resolution and put this all behind us and come out of this as a stronger community. And that's what one would call an example of what is called transformative justice as opposed to punitive justice, so that we keep talking until we have talked a mother to death as opposed to putting someone in jail and not talking at all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Paula Ayameda, I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Thank you. It's the difficult last name, Ioannidis. Paula Ioannidis from Ithaca. Welcome to the new year and to this ongoing issue that we've been bending your ears about for a while. I had some time while I was away for Christmas and New Year's and the holidays to really reflect and kind of think through what is it that prevents us from coming at this issue in a kind of communal agreement sort of way. And I realized that there are many worlds in which we live, right? And the worlds in which we live are based on the ideas and the investments that we have in particular ideas. And that if those ideas shift, if we permit those ideas to shift just a little bit, right, if we open ourselves, our hearts, our minds, our souls to this idea to be receptive, that maybe another way of looking at something might actually shift the way we see a particular problem. And I tried to put myself in your shoes as legislators and really think through this jail expansion and the way that you're coming at it. And I realized that the parameters of it are primarily sort of pragmatic, right? You're faced with a very pragmatic question of dollars and cents, how to save the county taxpayers' money, how to, reduce the boarding out costs. Then you have a whole procedural aspect that you're highly aware of and attuned to that, you know, in my worldview, I'm not attuned to, and so on. And I really tried to think through what might be the kernel that would introduce a little bit of receptivity in your minds to kind of come at the same issue, even if you want to look at it through dollars and cents, right, or through that kind of pragmatic lens. And the moratorium that we're proposing before you just simply buys us the time, if you will, to perhaps convince you that there's another way to come at the same issue and actually come out to a similar outcome, right? Like, for example, if your outcome that you desire is to save the county money, right? But I think that there's limits to that way of looking at it. And the reason I say that is because there is a larger set of laws, and I'll call them spiritual laws or I'll call them moral laws. And those laws don't subscribe to the pragmatism of dollars and cents, but rather to the impact that we're having in people's lives. And what I would encourage you to do in considering our moratorium or in considering whether you want to continue dialoguing with us and coming up with a kind of shared solution, right, is to open up yourselves to the question that even if it's just the idea that we might not know, that we might not have all of the answers, as none of us do, right? But that there's so much copious evidence about the immorality of expanding the infrastructure of the system that it is imperative that if we are to subscribe to a kind of larger set of spiritual or moral laws, that we must be the people who actually interrupt it. So I'm going to keep both on the table, and I really, really hope that you consider our moratorium and buy us some time to continue having this fruitful discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's the last blue card that we have. If someone else would like to speak to us, please come forward. Yes. And please tell us your name and what municipality you're from.
Hi. My name is Amy Crockford, and I would first like to address you guys. I have a brother.
You need to speak into the microphone.
Sorry. I have a brother. I love my brother. My brother loves me, but he does tell me I'm going to hell. There were two people in the police car on the night that I was arrested by Stephen Morocco. It was myself, and it was Stephen Morocco. And when it comes down to it, if the facts of this case were looked at, you can see that I had never once made up any details, changed any of my details, any story, any bit of the story from day one, on the day that I filed a citizen's complaint, which was 2 days after the arrest. If you look at the facts and you look at Officer Morocco's police reports, you compare them to Jason Lansing's police reports, there are blatant inconsistencies. I wasn't planning on speaking tonight, but what I would like to address is the fact that there is an obvious bit of corruption here. Stephen Morocco was hired by his co-defendant's father. That seems a little odd to me. I have never once lied at all about any of this. And I am sorry that it is hard for you to believe that about your brother. But I was there. Your brother was there. And what I said happened, happened.
Please address the legislature.
I apologize. Sorry. That's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak tonight? I'm not seeing any municipal officials. We have a place on our agenda for municipal officials to report to us. But so we'll move right on to privilege of the floor for legislators. And let's try to keep ours to about 3 minutes each, too, please. Jim Dennis, and then Carol Chalk, and then Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. I'm sure everyone noticed today that there's a new stamp that has been released and was released at 1 p.m. this afternoon in the Time Warner Center in New York City. And it's a love stamp, and it was designed by Q Cassetti from Trumansburg, New York, and that's pretty incredible. I've met a few famous people in my life. I've never met anyone who designed a stamp that the whole country will see. So I purchased 3 or 4 sheets today, and they're great. And Q does many other things also, and it's just pretty incredible that someone from Tompkins County has designed a stamp.
So. Why is it your face, though?
Sorry?
Why is it your face?
Carol Chalk.
Is new Kevin here? It would be wonderful to get to a point where we could have something on our desks and Jim could just flash that stamp up on the screen. So now that we're set up to be able to do that. I actually wanted to just let people know that there's a rare opportunity to hear a former colleague of all of yours, or many of yours, speak on Monday night. Dick Booth is going to be one of two speakers at the public library at 7 p.m. The League of Women Voters is putting on a program about the Adirondack Park and the state forests. And as you know, Dick had to leave midterm, which is how I ended up here, in addition to getting elected, to take an appointment to the Adirondack Park Commission. So that should be a very interesting talk. He and Andy Zepp from the Finger Lakes Land Trust will speak on the Adirondack Park and our regional forests, our treasures to enjoy and protect. That's the Borg Warner Room, 7 p.m. Monday night. And another item that caught my attention was the Family Reading Partnership that has launched a new program, Every Baby, Every Day. That will be opening. It's a book campaign to ensure that every baby has a strong foundation for language and literacy. Every baby born in 2014, 8 to 10 a.m. Friday at GIAC. And I will just say that I had the opportunity to spend a few days last week with my granddaughter, who's 17 months old, and most of you have met her, and watched her at a year walk around and work the room here and walk up to every person and nod and say hello and actually say a few words, which was incredible. And every minute I spend with her and listen to her be so verbal, I look at her and I realize she's got parents who speak to her all the time, who read to her. And at 17 months, there's no way that a child who hasn't had at least some of that can ever catch up educationally. There's just no way, and it's so sad. It's something that we could be doing for every child, so I encourage people to come, and if you can't come then, I'm sure there's an opportunity to support this campaign of the Family Reading Partnership.
Thank you, Carol. Have Nathan Shinagawa, then Kathy Luz Herrera.
Yeah, just two things. Mike, I wanted to thank you for thanking all of the county staff that were involved in helping relieve the ice jams and prevent the flooding that could have happened in a more devastating way in the Fall Creek area. And also, being there was really just an incredible experience because there were so many volunteers. And what I thought was really fun to see was how our former Kevin Sutherland, who's now the chief of staff to the mayor, was also playing a lead role in the command center. And I think it was really neat that he was able to use his connections and experience that he built in the county to help aid the city and work together. Obviously, it wasn't just him alone, but I thought that was particularly neat. The other thing I wanted to talk about was just the governor's, I guess you could say, the tax commission, which I know Joe's going to go over in more detail, and also these budget proposals and the state of the state and all that. And it's interesting that the governor wants to propose giving some tax giveaways to people or reducing folks' taxes just because there's suddenly a surplus. And what this reminds me of is that it reminds me of when we were when the economy was good, and so states said, oh, well, with pension systems, well, since the economy's so good, maybe we don't have to put any money into pension systems. And then a few years later, we end up having to spend millions of dollars increasing property taxes, by the way, significantly to pay for that. And we ended up paying because we didn't put in our contribution when we should have. And so this is very reminiscent of that. Just because we are suddenly in a position where the tax situation is beginning to turn around in New York State, now that's the time where we can use those funds to stabilize the state for the long term, not actually give away tax incentives to corporations, which will further, frankly, destabilize the state if things start turning for the worse again, which could happen. We don't know. It could go both ways. And so I want to urge the governor to make a more sound and sustainable decision as it relates to the budget moving forward.
Thank you, Nathan. Kathy Luz Herrera, then Mike Sigler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll segue onto what Nathan was just saying. I too, remember when those funds were raided, and then what was said was, well, those public employees get paid too much. The pensions are bankrupting us. And the fact was, if we hadn't raided that money and made it to where there wasn't enough in there because we hadn't collected it, we would have been fine. So I think that we're in a bad situation right now because unfunded mandates are going to be pushed down to us again, and we need to be vigilant in naming it whenever we see it. And also educating ourselves as to what alternatives we can come up with. There's one thing that I agree with that Governor Cuomo is saying, one of a few things, I guess, and that is that consolidation and cooperation are ways that we can increase efficiencies. And I think the response to the threat of flooding and the actual flooding in Fall Creek and in Tompkins County is a good example of how years of working together and having good working relationships between the municipalities pays off. We treated each other with respect. Frankly, I can't fill sandbags, and I wasn't a major part of that, but I was lucky enough that somebody enlisted me to deliver flyers, which I can do. But I saw folks from Cooperative Extension working hand in hand with folks from the county, with folks from the city, with a lot of my neighbors, and it was pretty cool to see how we come together, and we do it better the more we practice. So that was one. I just want to respond to a little bit of the comments that are going around. As somebody who's openly gay, you know, I've seen this article in the paper, and as somebody who's I've got relatives on both sides of law enforcement, and as somebody who is on the Tompkins County Legislature, I've watched this whole thing with trepidation and interest, because I've also been a union steward. So I know that there's always more to every story. And I want to say how much I appreciate people who don't necessarily have a lot of experience speaking in public, and how, you know, it makes your hands shake and stuff to get up there and actually take the risk and say what you need to say and what you want other people to know. And I think that that's something in Tompkins County that we if we don't encourage it, at least we don't punish it the way it might be in some other places. And I remember when if somebody got up and spoke about their sexual orientation, they'd lose their job. They'd lose any possible way of living. If you had if you were a renter, forget it. Nobody would rent to you. And I'm not saying things are all better. We still have ways to go. And in Tompkins County, you know, we may live in a little bit of a bubble, but these kinds of conflicts or differences of opinion or differences of perception are real in the sense that they're an opportunity for us. I know there's folks that want to, in their talking about it, come from a place of that they know what the real truth is. But I sense that there's a lot of people involved with this that are really open-minded and are learning as they go. And for me, I think it's a good opportunity for us to figure out as public citizens in a community that allows and encourages and actually tutors us on how to be active, to learn how to process these things and to become more open to each other and to understanding. You know, there's a cop culture, there's a LGBT culture, there's a urban living culture, and there's ways that all these cultures intermingle in any one person, any day. So I think that it's good that we're doing this. It's a shame that the situation has happened the way it has, that we got to talk about it. But, you know, I even think that for Amy Cockford to get up here and talk and say her truth, it speaks, I think, volumes to the way we work in Tompkins County. It makes people uncomfortable. I know it makes me a little uncomfortable. But guess what? You know, we do it. Nobody's hitting anybody. And I think some of us are learning. I know I am. The last thing I want to say is there somebody here that's going to...
3 minutes now.
Oh, yeah. Is there somebody here that's going to make an announcement about the Civil War Commission's reading tomorrow night? I sure hope you do. Is it tomorrow night?
Yes, tomorrow night where the Civil War Commission will meet its regular meeting here at 7:15.
Okay. I understand that y'all have done a bunch of readings and to bring some of the events to life, and that there's one coming up?
That will be coming up in Newfield, I believe the 28th. I'll double check that.
Okay,
that
would be great to hear about, just because I think those readings are a way in your communities that you can hear about events that happened, if not here, that are related to events that happened here. And it really makes history come alive. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. I have Mike Sigler, then Leslin McBean, Claiborne.
All right, my announcement will be quick. For those of you that don't know this, a lot of people already do. The state is actually interested in buying a substantial piece of property in Lansing and turning it into a state forest or a wilderness preserve. We are going to have a public meeting up in Lansing on that issue. The town has already voted to support it as a state forest. It has the least amount of tax impact on the town, but also on the school district. It does have a tax impact on the county. I'm going to work with Jay Franklin. He's going to be at this meeting on Friday as well to talk about that tax impact, and we might be able to mitigate it at a county level. So I'll have to put together a resolution to see if there's a way to. It's about $13,000 a year if it became a state forest. So we're going to work on a way that maybe we can write something. I mean, $13,000 to the state's really not that big of a deal. The county could absorb it too, but Jay actually put it a good way. He's like, hey, if you were to put $13,000 in my budget, that would be great. So fair enough argument there. The meeting was initially scheduled to be at 4 p.m. at the town hall on Friday. I'm going to bump that up to 3 p.m. because Ken Lynch, who's the regional director for New York State DEC, he has to be in Syracuse at 5. So 3 o'clock at town hall, Ken Lynch will be there. You can ask him some questions. Jay Franklin will be there. Andy Zepp will be there from the Finger Lakes Land Trust, myself, some of the town board members. Going forward, the town's already supported this as a state forest, but there seems to be some confusion as to what that actually means. I mean, a state forest, there's a lot of things you can do. There's a lot of things you can't do. Going forward, it'll be important to the use document. There'll be a pretty lengthy use document of what are the uses the town wants, other people in the county want. Obviously, other people in the county are going to have use of it, too. And you could say snowmobiling. You could say hunt. You know, it'll have to have hunting because it's a DEC property and state forest, even a wildlife management area, you'd have that. So I think it's good just to get that information out there and see what people in the town and the county really want there. So that's, again, 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock Friday at the Lansing Town Hall.
Thanks. Leslie McBean Claiborne, then Martha Robertson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nathan, thank you so very much. I'm hoping that some of what you said I wanted to talk about in terms of the governor, helping that most of our New Yorkers are smart enough to see sometimes through the shell game and see the bully tactics behind all of it that the governor likes to put in place with some of the things that he's doing. So thank you for bringing it up. I'm not going to reiterate. I want to also say a great big thank you to my colleagues and other members of the community who came out to the numerous celebrations in honor of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. this past week and over the weekend, especially our community breakfast at GIAC. Those of you who came to help us, you know, Will was there early in the morning schlepping and stirring, and so if the eggs were not good, blame it on Will. Thanks to everyone. We don't, often I feel like we don't do enough in this community to really honor the legacy of Dr. King. Ithaca College does an amazing amount of activities. Please pay attention to, you know, things that are still going on there as well. So again, thank you very, very much. I also too want to say thanks to the folks who came out to speak tonight. It's very interesting. Our theme for the breakfast this year, Jack, and our theme that will take us throughout the year comes from Dr. King. It says that faith is, and I'll probably get it wrong, faith is taking that first step even when you don't see the entire staircase or the whole staircase. Sometimes it does take a lot of faith and courage to step out and say what's on your mind. It takes a lot of faith and courage to step out and clear the air, a lot of faith and courage to step into the dark. We are being asked about a moratorium on the jail expansion project to consider and to look at what else is out there. That's some faith that we have to exercise if we decide to go that way. Faith is our DA and our sheriff taking the time to say, I'm not sure what these folks are really about. It's being a group of people coming repeatedly, but let's meet and talk with them. You don't know what's at the end of it all, but let's meet and talk with them. So I really do want to appreciate people and perhaps encourage all of us to think of that quote as something that can carry us throughout this year as we continue to do the work we're going to do. I want to raise the issue of living wage again. I know that in our previous budget, or this year's budget, we set aside some monies, and I'm hoping that soon we will have a sense of how we are going to be appropriating those funds to help bring folks up. We may not be able to bring everybody, and we know this is going to take some time to living wage levels. That is very important in our community. The last thing I want to talk about are our breakfast on Saturday. Just a whole idea of homelessness sort of rested with me in Tompkins County. And I know I made mention in there, you know, gotten phone calls already from the people who don't like what I have to say, but I'll continue to say what I have to say, that we have people in this community who own numerous properties, properties that are sitting empty, and we have an issue with homelessness. Not just empty for a month because we can't find people to rent, but properties have been empty for years, and we're talking about having an issue with homelessness. I hope that those people will look inside themselves and, like Paula said, look at it a different way. Maybe there's a different way to approach it. You might not be losing something if you give those properties over for people to live in. You might be gaining something. Look at it that way. I don't know the exact time. It might be 6:30, but someone mentioned the throwaways showing at Cinemopolis, and a big thank you for Cinemopolis for just being amazingly receptive to bringing movies that deal with issues of social justice and poverty and crime and incarceration and all of the social ills that plague us. I really want to thank Brett and the board at Cinemopolis for doing this. I had a chance to see it last night, and thanks to Ira McKinley for his role in as a filmmaker. Ira is from Ithaca, well, a few other places, but he claims Ithaca. And it's showing again on Sunday. And if you haven't had a chance to go, I do want to lend my voice to encourage folks to go to Cinemopolis. Does anybody know what time it's showing?
3:00.
At 3:00 on Sunday to check it out. It's a conversation we've been having over and over and over again. I encourage the people in our social services system to go see it. It helps to sort of highlight how people feel when they come before you for services and the place they're in, and maybe it'll help us in our delivery of that service to people. So please, please be encouraged to go see it and be a part of the conversations about how we can stop having this conversation around issues of poverty and just social injustice. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslin. And by the way, we liked your picture that we saw you down at Southside.
I heard about it.
It was very nice. looked like I had some great food that you had in your hand.
Oh, there was some good food.
Didn't we also see a picture of somebody that looks a lot like Brian Robeson? I could have sworn.
Is he serving up meals at the breakfast? He was there.
Okay, next we have Martha Robertson, then Will Burbank. And when we'll come around second time after that.
I'm getting hungry here. I just want to say about the, I'm looking forward to your presentation, Joe, about the state budget. Before this body meets again, New York State Association of Counties conference meets, and a lot of us are going. Next week, 2 weeks. And that's a really important opportunity for counties to be together and learn the latest, but also kind of express our, opinions. I hope the governor will come. Since he's been governor, has he been there once? I'm not sure if he's been there once in the years he's been governor. So, previous governors came every year. I'll just leave it at that. On the other hand, there's the regional council program, which seems to be a productive way to move state funds to the local level, where there's a lot of local input in how the money gets used. I would just want to highlight a couple of things about the regional council grants that were announced in December. If anybody wants to know, go to, you can look up nyworks.ny.gov or probably just Google New York Regional Councils. When you go to the southern tier, there are several funds that are available. The way, instead of asking for money for a particular project here or there, the council as a whole asks for money for five different funds that then the sort of big pots of money that the council then gets to allocate on a rolling basis. So there's not the August deadline that we have for the main regional council proposals. These are pots of money that are available at any time during the year. If you've got your proposal ready, you can make the application and have it reviewed. So the funds are, these are just the titles, and to get more information, you have to go to the website or make a phone call. But the titles are the Community Revitalization Fund, which has done a lot of downtown development, Rural Initiative Fund, which has done a lot of projects that help the agricultural community, as well as some very small towns and villages. Shovel Ready Sites, which has helped with building infrastructure so that businesses could move right into a community. And Community Renewal Fund, which is new, and I think that's mostly about housing and infrastructure. And I think there's a fund on, called Telemedicine, but that's not actually on the website that I can find. But any questions about it, you can also call 607-721-8605. That's the office in Binghamton, 721-8605. So I would encourage anybody that's, you know, sort of thinking, oh, darn, you know, my community or my business or my local government had a good idea, but when the deadline is passed, see if, go online, see if these funds, if your project can fit into one of these funds, because those are considered all during the year.
Thank you, Martha. Will?
Thank you, Mike. And I just wanted to thank Leslin and the crew of GIAC for putting on an amazing event on Saturday and the luncheon on Monday. I thoroughly enjoyed volunteering, and I did indeed stand next to Brian, who is out there serving a very large group of folk who braved what was a pretty snowy and cold day to come, and it was a wonderful event. I want to build a little bit on Leslin's discussion of the homeless. You know, we are all aware of the incredibly brutal weather we're dealing with, and just try to imagine, you know, I went for a walk this afternoon and I was having a hard time. Try to imagine living out in that for any length of time. And for much of the year to this day, you know, there are people in our own community that for a variety of reasons are finding themselves having to do just that. And I mentioned at our last meeting that I had the opportunity to visit a new project that was started by a gentleman in Newfield that is attempting to create an alternative for people who have been homeless. It's being called the Second Wind Cottages, and they're being built. They have been built, six of them actually. If you'll drive south on Route 13 toward Newfield, you pass Sell's Barn on your right, and you look over to the left, there's a little auto body shop there, and right next to that are these little buildings. They're very modest, maybe not a whole lot larger than say our bathroom in terms of size. I don't actually know the dimensions, but they incorporate a living space, a little kitchenette, and a bed. And their purpose is basically to provide an alternative for people who are struggling economically and for whatever reasons have not been able to find housing through the normal means. And it was built by entirely by volunteers on donated land. The mover of this was a gentleman named Carmen Guidi, who owns that body shop and created a nonprofit to do it. And the reason he did that is that he'd been traveling in Haiti and had his eyes open to just the plight of how people are living very, very different lives than anything he knew. And then he started realizing, oh my gosh, there are people back here in Ithaca, in our own community, that are similarly struggling, and could we do anything? And he got together and started just talking with people, and lo and behold, he's created this thing. And I think it's going to be an interesting model. He plans to eventually build, as many as 18 cottages, and it's on a bus line. And if you want to learn more about it, go to the Google Second Wind Cottages, and they'll tell you the whole story. They're looking for support, and it's very heartening to find something like that happening in our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Before we have at least one request for a second chance, does anyone else want to go first? If not, then Carol. And let's, the second time around, let's try to confine ourselves to 1 minute.
You know what? I had wanted to ask Mike Sidler some more about what he announced, and I could do this under PEAK report because it relates to that.
All right.
So I will do that.
Thank you. All right, let's move on. Under my report, I have some prepared remarks tonight I'm going to read. Again, we're in our reorganization mode, and I have committees to announce tonight and some thanks. The new term of the Tompkins County Legislature has begun, and we're already acting like a team, eager to do the people's business. I want to thank all of my fellow legislators for sharing their time with Vice Chair Jim Dennis and me to help craft the new committee assignments. Thank you for being open to some change and being flexible as we work through the drafts of responsibilities. 2014 will be a challenging year. Already we're hearing the drum roll from Albany, blaming counties and other local governments for expensive real property taxes, while completely ignoring the fact that the real reason for high local taxes is the cost of unfunded state mandates. Our county budget process will be even more difficult this year. Because of that, Legislature Vice Chair Jim Dennis will continue in his role as Chair of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Returning to that committee will be Nate Shinagawa as Vice Chair and experienced members Brian Robison, Leslyn McBean Claiborne, and Kathy Luz Herrera. In 2014, Tompkins County will continue to be open and welcoming to all people. Above all, we strive for that goal within our own workforce. To lead our effort, the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will continue this year. Leslyn McBean Claiborne will again chair that committee, which also includes serving members of community and staff. Among other things, the committee will be reexamining the working climate and training that we provide for our employees, and will be developing or expanding strategies to help job applicants better navigate the civil service process. Economic development will be a prime focus of the legislature this year. During 2013, the then Economic Development Committee focused on reviewing all of the economic development components within the county's purview. This year, the committee will continue under the chairmanship of Will Burbank. Working with Tompkins County Area Development, Workforce Investment, and Tompkins-Cortland Community College, for example, the committee will begin putting together strategies to leverage opportunities for the creation of good-paying jobs throughout the county. Joining Chair Burbank will be Carol Chalk as Vice Chair, and members Mike Sigler, Martha Robertson, and James Dennis. The Facilities and Infrastructure Committee does vital work. It oversees highway and bridge projects and the equipment that's needed to maintain them. The multiple county buildings and other facilities, along with our enterprise program in solid waste, require ongoing attention. In 2014, the committee will oversee the capital project for the addition to the Human Services Building that will provide space for the day reporting program currently housed in the old library building. This year, I have asked Kathy Luz Herrera to return to that committee as its chair. Additionally, David McKenna will act as vice chair, and Peter Stein, James Dennis, and Carol Chalk will round out that group. The Government Operations Committee will have a new chair. That committee administers departments including County Administration, Assessment Board of Elections, and public information, to name a few. This year, the Airport Department will be reporting to that committee. As an enterprise program, we have had the benefit of the airport being self-sustaining without needing county tax revenues. In a weak national economy and with so many changes in the airline industry, it will be important in 2014 to focus efforts to promote local usage by business, students, and the public to gain additional destination connections, to make sure equipment is up to date and the facility is well maintained and convenient for travelers. Nathan Shitagawa will chair the Government Operations Committee. His experience as an administrator in his private employment and as a past member of our Air Services Task Force will be particularly helpful. Dooley Kiefer will be the vice chair of the committee, with David McKenna, Mike Sigler, and David Klein as the remaining members. Last year, the Special Broadband Committee made much progress toward high-speed internet service for rural Tompkins County. State grant funding was obtained, and a public-private partnership set up to build it. But there is still some work to be done. A way needs to be found to fund service for areas in Enfield, for example, and there needs to be an educational program for potential users that should go forward. This year, the effort will be spearheaded by a subcommittee out of the Government Operations Committee. David McKenna will carry over and become chair of the subcommittee. David Klein and Mike Sigler will be the other legislative members. The subcommittee will reach out to former members of the Broadband Committee, both technical and legislative, to join it. Former legislator Pat Pryor will serve as vice chair of the subcommittee. There will be a change on the Health and Human Services Committee this year. That committee has charge of those departments which matter so much to the most vulnerable of our population, employ the majority of our employees, and administer the greatest part of the county budget. With the loss of a long-term former committee chair, it's important the new chair be a person who can take the role very seriously, work closely with administration, department heads, and committee members, and devote the time necessary to keep matters on an even keel. Peter Stein will be the chair of that committee. Kathy Lou Serrera will be the vice chair, and Nathan Shinagawa, Will Burbank, and Daniel Klein will be members. Our Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee will continue again this year. Among other things, the committee will be reviewing the county's comprehensive plan and will consider strategies for improving our area's use of alternative energy, meeting the need for affordable housing, considering a renewal of the county's housing fund partnership with Cornell University and the City of Ithaca, and reviewing both the New York State 2014 Energy Plan and the county's own energy plan. Carol Chalk will chair the committee this year. Will Burbank will serve as vice chair, and David McKenna, Daniel Klein, and Michael Sigler will be the other members. The Public Safety Committee will have important work this year as well. The Sheriff's Department reports to it, as does the Probation Department, the District Attorney, and the Assigned Counsel Program. That committee will oversee the planned jail renovation capital project, and at the same time will be taking a fresh look at alternatives to incarceration and reentry programs. Although the county does a very good job in those areas, we could always do better and are always open to new ideas. Brian Robison will again chair the committee this year. James Dennis will be the vice chair, and the other members will be Dooley Kiefer, Leslyn McBean Claiborne, and Martha Robertson. The Tompkins County Charter is our county's constitution. It is a living document that can be and is amended from time to time. The charter calls for the document to be completely reviewed every 10 years, and it is time to do that. Accordingly, one of two special committees of the legislature this year will be the Charter Review Committee. It will be charged with looking at all the sections of the charter and making recommendations for changes where appropriate. In addition, the committee will take a look at the positions of the various elected officials and consider changes that might be made to encourage greater voter participation in county elections. I will chair the committee, and Dooley Kiefer will be the vice chair. Serving with us will be Peter Stein and Kathy Luz Herrera. The second special committee is really a carryover from last year's Capital Plan Review Committee. The last unfinished business of that committee is the recommendation for the future of the old library building when the day reporting program leaves. In 2014, the old library committee will be meeting as needed to review and recommend on the request for expressions of interest process currently underway. I will continue as chair of the special committee. Leslyn McBean Claiborne, in whose district the old library is located, will join as vice chair, and the other members will be Martha Robertson, Dooley Kiefer, and Carol Chalk. As we go about the people's business this year, I know we legislators will all do our very best, but whatever we do will always be pale by comparison to the work of the real heroes of county government. Those heroes are our county employees who work with us each day to deliver vital services, to protect the vulnerable, and to help us administer everything we do according to law and in compliance with so many federal and state regulations. It's a very big job, and they do it very well. Thank you. I have some chair's appointments tonight. We already appointed Tish Perlman, our poet laureate. But to the Workforce Investment Board, I have Jeffrey Madison, local education representative. And to the Civil War Commission, I have John Wirtis. Let's turn to the reports tonight. May we hear from Joe Mariana, our county administrator. Joe, I know you have a presentation for us.
You almost said PowerPoint, didn't you? And I could hear that anticipation
I
in your
I
voice,
did,
and indeed I do.
I looked at the screen.
Indeed I do have a PowerPoint. Yeah. I'm going to take my time tonight in my report to talk about a recommendation that came out of something called the New York State Tax Relief Commission now over a month ago. That has a few central elements that relate to us very, very closely. And over the past month or so, since this report was released, it's become increasingly relevant. In his State of the State address a few weeks ago, the governor indicated that he would be embracing some of the concepts that are in this report. And today, in his budget address, the governor made it very clear that some of the things that we'll be talking about tonight are central to his agenda for the upcoming year, and have consequences to us, to local governments, to school districts throughout the state. So I wanted to spend a couple of minutes to talk about that, but also to begin to talk about how we might be able to begin to talk about alternatives to the way the governor has approached this with respect to tax relief, because I think we have an important story to tell and some constructive alternatives to make. So I'm going to spend about 10 minutes to go through, again, a review of what the commission reported. And again, now I can tell you that this is part and parcel of what the governor is advocating as well. First of all, with respect to the report itself, it only took him 9 weeks to come up with the recommendations that are in here. The commission was formed in late October, early November, by early December. Actually, it was in October. By early December, the report was completed and presented to the governor. It was the group was a small group co-chaired by former Governor George Pataki, former State Comptroller Carl McCall. There were seven other members in that group. I found it pertinent that there were no representatives of local governments or school districts on that commission. There are some major recommendations in that report. Primary, I think, to the recommendations is a two-year so-called freeze on property taxes, and I'll talk about what that is in just a minute. There's also what's called a circuit breaker that's been proposed that tries to link property taxes to ability to pay. And what we found today in the governor's budget address was that circuit breaker comes in the form of an income tax credit will only be available to homeowners who live in jurisdictions that have adhered to the property tax cap. The report also calls for a reduction in property taxes on manufacturers through a state income tax credit. With respect to the freeze, and it's been billed as a property tax freeze, You'll hear about it in the newspapers tomorrow as the budget message gets out there. Let me try to explain what it is. It's 2 years. It runs 2 years. In the first year, the state will issue a rebate check to homeowners in jurisdictions that stay within their property tax cap. The rebate check is equal to the increase in their property tax bill from year to year. That's the way they freeze the tax. So, for example, I'll go through some numbers, but if our property tax levy, if our property tax bill went up, as long as that increase was within the property tax cap, New York State would send homeowners a check to pay them for the cost of that increase in their property taxes, thus the freeze. It negates the effect of an increase in our property tax bill. In year two, it's kind of the same deal. So there'd be another check, although as I'm reading the governor's proposal that's just out, it may come in the form of a credit as opposed to a rebate check, but still the rule applies that nobody gets anything unless they live in the jurisdiction that stays within the cap. But then there's a second condition in the second year, and that is, if it was the county, we would have also agreed to be involved in a shared service or a consolidation plan. So there are two conditions for that second year of benefit, and some of the conditions on that are beginning to come out now, and we'll have to look through those as we get into the governor's budget. Year three, don't know. It seems like a two-year kind of an in-and-out benefit that the state provides to homeowners, again, as an incentive for us and other local governments and schools to stay within the cap. It sure appears as if in year three that rebate or credit program goes away. So to try to figure out what would this mean to us, we pretended that the plan was in place for 2014, the budget that we just finished a couple of months ago. What if this had been in place there? Well, we came pretty close to being within our cap. Cap was 2.26%. That's an increase in the levy. We came in the end at 2.95%, so a little bit higher than the cap. But to be able to meet that cap, we would have had to find another $301,000 in cuts in our budget to be able to make it within cap. To cut $301,000, that's the equivalent of about five positions. So if you want to look at it that way, to be able to reach that goal, we would have had to cut another five positions. If we had done that, that reduction alone would have reduced the impact of our budget on local taxpayers, the average homeowner or median homeowner. Under our budget that was passed, the median homeowner had an increase of $14.81. This would have reduced it from $14.81 to $7.31. So it would have been a savings. If we had cut our budget, if our levy had been 2.26% higher as opposed to 2.95%, that's what would have happened. Now, if the state plan had been in place, the state would then send that homeowner a check for $7.31 to cover that spread.
Do you mean $7.49?
No. We would have saved $7.49 by reducing our levy to the cap level. That would have meant there's still a growth factor of $7.31 to the homeowner. The state would have written the homeowner a check for $7.31 to bring the total effect down to zero. Okay. I'll go through the numbers in a minute, and maybe they might get clearer.
So the $7.31 would be per $100,000 in property tax?
That's for the owner of a house worth $163,000. That's our median home. So, again, when you go through all this effort, the end result for the average homeowner in 2014, if it had been applied, would be $7.31 in a check from the state.
Joe, quick question. Mm-hmm. When saying it's only $7, that's not quite right, because there's the local tax also and the school tax. So with our numbers, it would be roughly four times that the person would receive. Isn't that correct?
Don't know. Because I don't know how the school fared with respect to its cap.
Right.
I don't know. All I can speak to is us. And our increase was $14.81.
Let Joe finish his presentation, then take questions.
This may help clarify, Martha, the numbers. So, again, from the perspective of a homeowner, if we had made cuts in our budget to hit the cap, we would have reduced the impact by $7.49. That would leave $7.31 for the state to cover. So the homeowner would have saved altogether $14.81. That's how much their tax bill went up because of our 2014 budget. So they would realize that savings. With respect to costs, because there are benefits and there are costs, the cost of achieving that savings would be a $301,000 reduction in non-mandated programs. Can't cut our mandated programs, so it would be a $301,000 cut there. And I don't know what it would cost to administer the program that results in the $7.31 check.
We'll probably be charged for that.
Don't know. So that's kind of a scenario. What if it had been in place in 2014, and you can see the magnitude? I think we ought to talk about an alternative to the state's approach. At the same time, I think we ought to embrace the governor's goals and what he is trying to accomplish. The governor has said we need to talk about the realignment of responsibilities between governments. But when the state talks about that realignment, it's always at the local level. It's always about towns and villages and cities and counties and the realignments and marginal shared services at that level. I think we embrace that rhetoric, but we expand it to include that relationship between the state and its counties. And we ought to be talking about the realignment of those responsibilities. With respect to that realignment, what's it mean? It's pretty simple. It means that the state would accept responsibility for the full cost of its programs. That's realignment. If that were to happen, if the state were to accept responsibility for its programs, this is goal number two of the governors in the states, property tax relief, it would result in a historic reduction of property taxes. And it would result in a sustainable reduction of property taxes. That burden would shift from local property tax bases to the state, tremendous relief in local property taxes. And to get there, I mean, clearly this can't happen in 1 year. So the suggestion that I have is that it be phased over four phases, whether that's 4 years or four increments, I don't know, but a four-phase approach. And again, the end product is it achieves governmental realignment on a very large scale. And we do think it's time to think about bold realignments. So the first phase, and again, this could take any shape, but phase one, the way I've sketched it out, the state would pick up the cost of its Medicaid program. And it's fair to call it its Medicaid program because there is no such thing as a county share of Medicaid. It's the non-federal share. It's the state share. So phase one would be the state picks up its Medicaid costs. If that were to happen, there's an immediate property tax cut in Tompkins County of $11.8 million. That's a 26% cut in property taxes because we don't have to raise money to pay that bill. If that were to happen, the effect on an average homeowner is significant. It would drop by $294 from 1 year to the next if that were to occur. In phase two, it would continue. So in phase two, maybe the state would pick up the cost of its pre-K special ed and its early intervention programs. If that were to happen, we could make another $2.6 million cut in local property taxes. That's another 8% on top of what we would cut the year before. That keeps bringing the average homeowner's bill down. Now it goes from $828 to $765. In phase three, it keeps going. In phase three, the state would pick up the cost of its legal indigent defense obligation. Counties don't have a responsibility to provide defense to the indigent. The state does. The state were to pick up that cost and also the cost of its child welfare programs, we could cut another $4.2 million, local dollars, out of our budget and put out another 14% cut in our local county property taxes. If you did that, another drop in the average homeowner bill from $765 to $660. In the final phase, phase four, the state would now pick up the cost of its public assistance programs and also the cost to administer its mandated programs. So in this category, we put basically the DSS administrative cost would be in that final phase. If that were to happen, county taxes could be cut by almost $7 million more. That's another 26% cut from the year before. And now the homeowner's bill has dropped from $660 to $487. So quick through the arithmetic. Here's where we are today. Our current levy is $45.1 million. For an average homeowner, the bill is $1,122. Under the phase one approach that we talked about, that bill drops to $828, then to $765, then to $660, than to $487 over those four phases. As those phases come to completion, the savings to the average homeowner is $636. That's a 57% reduction in property taxes. So again, with respect to the realignment of responsibilities and the effect that can have on property taxes, if the, what the governor says is true, property taxes are the most onerous tax out there. They're killing business. This is a way to make meaningful, sustained, I think, historic reductions in property taxes. Why would you want to do that? It's the kind of rational realignment that the state's advocating. We're okay with that. There should be a 21st century alignment of responsibilities, and we're okay with that. And this seems to fall within that category. It aligns costs with benefits. We've talked about that when we talked about mandate relief. The state, when it makes decisions, should have to absorb the costs of its decisions and align those with the benefits. That's the way good decisions get made. It does approve accountability. The state would be accountable for its decisions as it relates to human service programs and policies. This one gets a little deep, but at least as I look at what the state's trying to do with property taxes and circuit breakers and exemptions and credits, it's trying to make a property tax feel like an income tax. You don't have to do that. You can just move that burden from the property tax to the income tax and realize the benefits of a progressive income tax. You can spread the burden more equitably through the income tax than through the property tax. The whole state tax system is based on ability to pay. A couple of other thoughts in terms of the why. Again, the allocation of costs equitably across broad and progressive tax bases. Our property tax base is not broad. It's narrow. It's exempted. And it gets worse as you get to cities, but certainly counties like ours, the property tax base is riddled with exemptions, and those exemptions are mandated by the state. So if you can move that to a broader base tax, everyone is better off for that. And last, if we were to peel away mandates from our budget, we couldn't talk about unfunded mandates as the barrier to our holding the line on our spending. We would be accountable then for controlling the cost of county programs, and that's okay. That would be an acceptable outcome, I believe. And finally, I think, it's the last bullet, I really do believe this would produce historic levels of property tax relief. So that's kind of the sum and substance of a multi-page memo that I wrote to all of you that suggests that maybe this is a way to kind of reframe what we've talked to the state about that embraces what the governor has said, which is it's time for bold realignments between governments to expand that definition to include the relationship between the state and its counties and acknowledge that property tax relief is really important. We need it. But this is a better way of accomplishing property tax relief than the notion of 2 years' worth of rebate checks and other, I'd call them gimmicks, that are meant to try to leverage us to stay within a property tax cap that sometimes you choose to go beyond because you believe that the value of the services that are affected are worth the small additional price we pay to exceed the cap. So that's what we've come up with. And, again, it's gotten very relevant with today's budget. What I would like to do is to bring these recommendations to a county administrator's meeting this Friday, to see if there's any support. Because if this is Tompkins County alone, it's not going very far. If there's support among other counties, maybe it will. But I'd like to bring it to that group of county administrators, see where it goes, and the NYSAC meets in a couple of weeks, and we could begin to circulate these ideas there.
All right, questions. I see there are a number. The first one I caught was Brian Robinson, then Martha Robertson. Others that want to speak, Peter Stein and Mike Sigler. Carol Chalk.
Okay. thanks, Joe. Part of me just can't wait to get my $7 check and have the processing costs of about $15 per, but that's all right. You're talking about historic property tax relief, and might we also be talking about historic state income tax increases? I mean, it's got to be one. What I would like, and I, obviously you didn't do it, and I didn't expect it, to be fair, just so people get an idea of the scope of things, to take a median income and the present state income tax and try to figure out what the increase would be and what the new income tax would be. I mean, it's got to be a zero-sum game at some point.
But I understand the point, and in the long memo, I try to get to that because that's often the argument that we hear. And we'll hear from the state. Who cares which pocket it comes from? I mean, that's what the state will say. But it makes a difference for a couple of reasons. First, the state has a much broader tax base than we do, and that's important. That means almost everybody will pay as opposed to just some people paying. So in terms of how it affects a middle-income family, you probably have to have a sophistication I don't have in terms of being able to spread that across a base that includes everybody as opposed to just 60% of the taxpayers, as is the care that not taxpayers, the property owners, as is the case here. Mm-hmm. So there's benefits of a broader base. I think decisions would be different, and I suspect better, if the state had to fully account for the cost of its decisions instead of passing those costs over to counties. So there might be some savings on the margin if that were to happen. I think if you consolidated that payment stream, the state supported everybody, and you would avoid some of the fragmentation that exists right now. Right now, as we deliver services and we're billing, there's formulas and lots of administrative costs are incurred just to be able to comply with the state billing process and the co-funding. That could be eliminated if the state simply picked up the cost of its programs. So I think there are some efficiencies that result from it. I think there are a lot of equities. And again, if the state has concluded that property taxes are the number one deterrent to business development, this is a way to move that burden off the property tax and into a more progressive income tax and spread them that way. That was a really long answer to a short, good question.
No, and I understand that.
Martha?
Interesting.
Yeah.
First, a couple of questions, and it goes to what Peter was saying. If we each get three property tax bills, so are they going to have to calculate this three times for every property owner?
That's the way I'm reading it, yes.
The administrative headache in that is mind-boggling.
They got to figure it out.
Yeah.
That's an astounding waste of effort.
Right.
I think.
I won't argue with that. I mean, I've talked to Jay Franklin about how would you administer this. I mean, what if somebody invests in a new kitchen and so their assessed value is affected? How are those ordinary things factored into this very simple approach?
On the cost to us, let's say this five layoffs that we, you know, if we were to sort of look at the trade there, if we're trying to meet the cap, don't we have unemployment payment if there's five people are laid off?
Sure.
So you'd really want to look at the net. No, what savings do we realize by laying off five people? We might have to lay off more than five people.
That's a good point, and I did not factor that in.
Okay. Then, as far as the worldview you're trying to change, the administrators is an important place to start. The county executives are critical. And I would say when you get to Albany, and I won't be there long enough to help with this.
I take back my offer to bring him to the governor's office.
I mean, it's, you know, I guess you have to lay it out for the governor, but I think for the governor's office. But I maybe the assembly is really the place to try to focus the lobbying. I mean, if you can catch hold in just one of those seats of power, maybe there's a way to modify what I'm sure is going to be the next freight train that comes through Albany. But it's, yeah, and the fact that it's only a two-year program at all, and you haven't even mentioned, what about do counties get credit for all the consolidation efforts we've already done? I'm sure no. So it's just clear litigate past an election. It's just breathtaking. So, and I think, you know, I would urge you to take this PowerPoint to the Budget Committee of NYSEC, and you know, see if you can get them to let you present this at the committee meeting that Monday, so that everybody really hears it.
Before I go to Peter, I just want to say that Joe's bringing this to us to see whether he would like, this is his recommendation as our county administrator, that we take some action, but he's not going to go any further unless he hears from us that this is what we want him to do, and I think that's why he's here tonight. So when we get done asking these questions, I'm going to put that to you folks. Peter Stein. I'll get you, Kathy.
Let's see. A couple of things I wanted to say. And the first is that I thought I heard something that I didn't agree with in your presentation, so I may be wrong, but let me just lay it out. The notion of the broader tax base, because there aren't so many exemptions, but in this proposal, Cornell University would still not, they don't pay any income tax. So what you may be saying is that you're suggesting that they tax Cornell University and the local churches and so forth. I think you don't mean that. So it's not clear to me how much broader a state tax is than a local tax, because the exemption is the same for both, probably. So just a comment to think about when you make that statement. The other thing is a question. Much of the things that we call mandates are things that we do ourselves. That is, and we don't give dollars to Albany to do it. Like when there are mandates on the jails and so on and so forth, we do that. So I imagine that what you must be saying is that you expect the state to pay us for doing that. So what this really is going to be is that we'll keep doing the same things that we do now, but we'll get a big check from the state to pay for it. Or are you saying, well, let the state run the jails and let the state run the human service part of our operation? Let them not only pay for it, but actually do it. So I think you ought to make it clear which one of those two things you're talking about and how this flow of money is going to take place.
Okay.
So,
and let me talk first about the scope of things that are on this chart. These are really the hard mandates. So these aren't what we have come to call mandated responsibilities, where we have to do something and are given latitude about how to do it. These are really the hard mandates. So Medicaid, public assistance, we used to call welfare, pre-K EI, child welfare programs are in there. So it's not the jail, it's not the DA, it's not the clerk, it's not those other things that we have a responsibility to do. They're the hard mandates. How would you do it? I think, Peter, the way we would propose it to the governor is look at us as a contract vendor. And we kind of are. We're kind of a contract vendor. The state has essentially contracted with us to deliver its services. The problem with that relationship is they tell us to do that service. They pay us for some of the costs of providing that service, but not all. So under this plan, we would become more like a traditional contract vendor. We do the work for the state, and they would compensate us fully for doing that work. I think that's the way we would lay it out. And whether the state would then say, well, we don't like it that way, maybe we will do things directly, at that point we win because we've engaged them and we're talking about those kinds of things. But the way I viewed it is a very traditional contract vendor approach, but we are fully compensated for the work we do.
Okay, I think just to make it clear, you ought to include that in the presentation, that's the way it's going to be done.
I can do that. Okay.
I have Mike Sigler, then Carol Chalk.
Governor Mariana, thanks for the presentation.
I love it.
Okay, Ryan. Is this something you were tasked with, or just something you came up with?
Mike, please.
Yeah, when the report was I tasked with this, or did I just did, when this report first came up, I was frankly kind of offended by what I saw, and I began to put some things thoughts together, and then talk to some on the legislature about kind of filling that out and seeing if it's something that I should bring to the full legislature. So I kind of initiated it, but got enough encouragement to bring it to the full body that I did.
Okay. I just didn't know the history of it. And yeah. I guess my question's for you, Mike. Is
it was discussed with the past chair and the past vice chair.
No, that's fine. So is this something you're going to bring forward tonight for us to vote on?
See if there's a consensus to go ahead with it.
I think you kind of need more than that, to be honest with you, just because he's not an elected official.
Well, we can always make a motion if someone wants to do that. But let's was there anything else, Mike, that you wanted to...
No, that's it. Thanks, Mike.
All right, then we have Carol Chalk. Then we have Kathy Luz Herrera.
Yeah, no, I'll say that it sort of has been very clear that as a body we have been very upset about the unfunded mandates, and then when the governor made his speech and the proposal came up, it's sort of talking about the shared services and the freeze, we had discussions here, so I feel confident that Joe was following upon more than guidance from the chairs and past chair, but from the rest of us and our concerns. I certainly think these are points that are worth making and that you make them really well. And to have something presented so clearly like this, it helps crystallize for people. And all of those you've been talking about going to. I have a couple issues. One is, it's all very rational. Your approach is very rational. It makes a lot of sense. But that kind of assumes, to assume, that the whole proposal is really meant to benefit the taxpayers to begin with, as opposed to being a sort of a PR effort. So I'm not sure that we can expect a rational response in return, or that we can expect it to really go anywhere, certainly not for this year. I mean, I think that this freeze, and it's all a done deal, and it's hard to think that it's not going to just happen, and that our, you know, even bringing it with other counties and jurisdictions, if this is true, that this is going to apply not only to counties but to municipalities, I'd recommend also taking it to the Association of Towns and maybe mayors, because it certainly deserves a lot of play. So that's my first thought about it. The other is a deeper concern, because I know that we like to talk about the fact that it has to do with quality of services that we deliver. If we were to achieve this, we talk a lot about the fact that the state mandates that we do things, and for some things they mandate, you know, if we're going to do them, we have to do them in a certain way. Some of them they mandate that we do, but we have some discretion, and that there are those that they mandate that we do and how we do them. But in fact, we do have some discretion because we spend the money, because we hire the people, because we've decided to keep our local offices here, as opposed to some of the offices where they've talked about merging ours with those in nearby counties. We end up still with some discretion and some oversight responsibility over the people delivering the services. And so we do have some more control over the quality of those services. And so if we achieved this, would it come back? What's the potential for it to come back to haunt us in the way that the services are delivered, who gets hired, how much work and workload they're expected to carry, and do we end up picking up the slack than from local property taxes. And I'll give one example of what I'm talking about. I've talked here before about the fact that my daughter-in-law, and again, I have some personal experiences with my family and in other parts of my life, in Texas, she decided to become a lawyer. And part of the reason that she did was that as a sophomore in college, she signed up for a program where she was the legal representation for a four-year-old, representing that four-year-old in court as the parents fought about custody, and the state determined it was a situation, a low-income situation. This was the representation a four-year-old had. In New York State, we just don't do it that way. What's the potential for a slip in services? I don't think it would be that drastic in New York State, even if the state were to take over some of the things you talked about. But what's the potential?
Joe, do you take her question?
I think that's way down the road. I think what we're trying to do is to change the paradigm. The governor has started that. And so what this tries to do is instead of pushing back against the governor, as we often do, and then the governor's office pushes back against us, to instead accept what the governor's proposed. The governor says it's time for creative realignments of the way government works in New York State. We accept that. Let's work on that. The governor says we need property tax relief in New York State. We agree with that. And let's combine those two things, and let's work on a solution that includes both. So it's really at this point, I would agree that there are down-the-road issues that are really serious. Today, the goal is to basically change thinking and see if we can get this somehow inserted in the vocabulary between us and the state and help, achieve some of these major strategic changes that we've been looking for years. That's what we're trying to do.
And the quality of services question?
Again, that's a down-the-line question, and it's an important one. I think it's down the road. Today's goal is to change the way the state looks at this and see if we can wedge this into the thinking in Albany.
Kathy, then Jim, and then Martha wants another shot at it, and then I'd really like to Dooley's got her hand up, but let's see if we can be crisp and try to get through this so we can come to some kind of resolution and move on to the rest of the agenda. Go ahead, Kathy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Several people have touched on some of the points I want to make, so I'll try and run through them. I like what you're saying. I would, in a tongue-in-cheek way, call it a modest proposal. I think that in my own cynical perspective that this Tax Relief Commission report is an effort to continue to put pressure on local municipalities to submit to an arbitrary and capricious tax cap. And I think that here in Tompkins County, we've done a pretty good job of letting folks explain to us what their priorities are, and that people understand that we do demand a quality of services that is different than some other communities. And I'll just digress here and give an example. We listened to the public talking to us about they had talked to department heads. Some of them talked to Gwen Wilkinson and other folks, Ken Lansing. Our department heads don't necessarily have to interface their precious time talking to individuals. But in our community, we value that kind of dialogue. We believe that it makes for better government. And it's possible that in a one-size-fits-all kind of government, someone could say, this isn't necessary. And it could be eliminated, forbidden, or whatever. Department heads would be discouraged from that. It's a small example, but it's a way that we encourage access, and we're willing to pay for it. It makes our, I think, community better. It's an example of our community values anyway. I believe, will agree that he heard at budget us actually discussing the context of the Tax Relief Commission report and urging you to help us find a way to, what's the word they use in PR, to help us find a way to present this or to realign it or whatever, because there are aspects of it that it can be agreed with. I I'm not as rosy-eyed as you are in terms of agreeing with the premises behind the governor's tax relief commission, but I will say that I think that there are risks in doing it, but I would be fully willing to court any of those risks, because what it does is it puts it in a much easier frame of reference for everybody to understand. It would be a nightmare to administrate, and the costs would be forced back on us. I mean, that's clear. It's not just a tendency. It would happen. Like Carol, though, I did consider, okay, there could be some impacts. But the first one, I think you touched on it, Joe, and I don't know if I heard you correctly, but I was thinking, as you were saying, it would level it. A community like ours that has such a high percentage of tax-exempt property, would the leveling of it be greater or less? And some of that would depend on the way that it was tweaked. Would it eliminate taxes on nonprofits? Probably not. But if there's a way in the proposal that we could determine our own fate with regard to how that was done, and proportionately speaking, if there was a way that spreading it across the state would help us, because look at the economic, what are they called, the areas of development where they're saying that universities can have these tax-exempt manufacturing sites for them. Well, that's great for the whole state, but in some ways it does burden the local municipalities in which those places are located. So I'd like some thinking on that, and I bet you've done some of that. And then I have one or two short comments.
On the spreading of the burden, you mean, across the base?
What it would do for us, or how we could approach it.
Yeah, I haven't really done an analysis of that. It's similar to what Brian was talking about, and I really haven't done an analysis. I do know that the state's income tax base, and remember, they have other revenues than the income tax. They have a nice portfolio of taxes, and we've got the property tax and the sales tax. So they can not only spread it across a base, like an income tax base, but they can also spread it across different taxes, because they have a corporate net income tax. They have license fees. They have a number of taxes that we don't have to equitably spread that burden. Now, what it means to an average homeowner or a taxpayer in Tompkins County, I don't know, but I believe that equity can be achieved by shifting this burden from a property tax that, in our case, has 40% of the owners exempted from paying taxes, to one that doesn't have nearly that amount of exemption factored into it. So that's the best I can do with respect to the spreading of the burden, and I do think equities will result.
I love that. And just two more things I want to say. Along the lines of what Carol was saying, we do like to do our mandates sometimes at a higher level. And there's some risks involved in your proposal if it was a rigid result. But I believe something could be built into it where we say, okay, we would be reimbursed this much for the mandate, and in addition to this contract, we decide we're going to do more. And I think it could be clear-cut enough that we could talk about, I don't know, reasonable and customary charges, you know, that kind of an idea. But I think it's worth looking at. And I personally believe that we at the Budget Committee did encourage you to do this sort of thing. You, as usual, took it and ran with it, which I think is great. But I would support it. And I believe that any risks that it might entail would be far offset by the benefits. I want to see, personally, I'll go to NYSEC. If you're going to give a presentation to NYSEC about this, listen, I will go. I will hitchhike if I have to get there, because I just think it's timely, and I think that more than a few counties would agree with this perspective, and many, if not
Let's see if
all
we can get a couple
them.
Other questions here.
Okay.
I just want to point out it's almost time for the break. We've got Jim Dennis. Dooley hasn't spoken yet, and Martha would like to have another time, and then I'd really like to wrap up so we can get to the break.
I have questions. Joe, does this proposal, I don't mean yours, but the governor's, have to pass a legislative test?
Yes.
At New York State? Okay. I believe you should. I think you've done a lot of work on it. You've had a lot of input from a lot of people, legislators and others. I think you should share it with your county administrator colleagues and whoever is going to NYSEC. It should be forwarded on to NYSEC and see what their response to it is. I believe they need help. I believe there sitting on their hands trying to figure out how to respond to the governor. And many counties in New York State have nearly spent their reserve funds away trying to stay within the cap. And if you look around at counties, Yates County, 10% increase 1 year, 11% the year before, because the year before that, they stayed at the cap and spent all their money. So I think it's a great proposal. And knowing what I know about state government, which is not as much as others, all these things have to be talked about. All these things have to be negotiated. And you might hope that there would be something good that would come out of all of it. I think it's a great start from Tompkins County, and we're again leading with good things.
Julie?
Independent of Joe, I was terribly offended by the governor's what seemed to me like political blackmail. He would send a letter to our residents that they're not getting a check because we insisted on paying for services that we believe they really want. So I was delighted to see what Joe did with his careful thinking. I absolutely think he should take it to the county administrators group. I am not going to NYSAC, but I will do whatever I can to support it. I hope it can get publicity way beyond our community in NYSAC. I have no problem if you want to add to this document what Peter wound up suggesting you add. And I think that the most important thing to get out to the public sooner rather than later is the very small magnitude of this short-lived tax rebate. It's quite stunning how little it is. And I'm not afraid to go forward with the consequences because I agree with what Kathy was pointing out, that we would have the ability to add on to whatever the state tells us to do.
Thank you. Martha?
Joe, the president this year of NYSAC is Mark Alger, yeah. County manager from right. Steuben. Maybe he's, that's why I'm poking around here. He may be, you know, another maybe. Ear to you know. And I, at the end of my remarks, I'll make a motion if you'd like to have a motion.
Well, we've been requested to have a more formal action, and I don't see a problem with that. If someone wants to make a motion of some kind, you're in order.
Yeah. Okay. The state association, I think Carol's point about going to the Association of Towns, to NYCOM, and I got a report from NYSA, State Teachers Union, called Taking New York Backwards. Pataki Commission's tax cuts exacerbate inequality and favor the wealthy. December 2013, you know, and there's a lot of people who lines for quality education, others are on this. I can forward it to everybody, but is...
I'm not hearing the motion. What?
I said when I finished my remarks.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There are a lot of people who are affected by this, and this just is, I think, terrible policy. And I think time is short, but maybe NYSAC could have a 9-week presidential commission on responding to the Pataki Commission's. I'm actually serious. They had I was a few years back on that Medicaid commission about Medicaid takeover. NYSAC could do something like that and really get a lot of attention to it, try to at least slow down the train. So with that, I think you've heard the comments here, sort of a few tweaks maybe that would answer some questions ahead of time. But understanding that, you don't in this one presentation have to solve the whole alternative proposal package, and you've got an excellent start here. So with that, I'd like to make a motion that we support this presentation, this approach, and encourage you to take it to the appropriate other partners in the state and to NYSAC, and that we support you taking time to do this. We think it's an important investment.
Make it bipartisan? Is there a seconder from bipartisan?
That the representatives going to NYSAC be also take that forward?
Absolutely, sure.
Is there a second for the motion? Jim Dennis. Discussion about the motion.
Wait, Mike, I would just suggest that we make it a bipartisan, like a mover and a second or bipartisan.
Happy to do that if someone wants it, but I don't think it's necessary. It's an action of the legislature. Are we ready to vote?
Yes. Would you articulate the motion again?
I believe the motion is that, as Martha said, that we support this effort to bring forward an alternative to the governor's report, and that it we authorize the administrator and members of the legislature to take this to the appropriate agencies, such as the County Administrators Association, the NYSAC conference, and others that it, as deemed appropriate.
Thank you.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those against? That's unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take a 10-minute break. Be back in your seats at quarter of, please. Okay, we're back after break. Joe, did you have anything more to report to us tonight? All right. Let's go to the county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
I have no report.
John, I have a question.
Sure.
This year we reduced the legislature from 15 members to 14 members. And there are certain resolutions and actions of this body that require, I believe, a two-thirds vote. How many votes is that now with one less?
Still 10.
Still 10.
Still 10.
So, for example, if we have a bond resolution that requires 10 votes, we or requires that supermajority, we need to have 10 and not 9 votes.
Right.
All right. I just want everybody to hear that. Thank you. Finance Director Rick Snyder.
I have no.
Welcome to the table.
Thank you. It's good to sit at the adult table. I have no report for tonight.
Well, that's even better. Okay. A resolution is to be added and withdrawn from the agenda. Dooley Kiefer.
Yes, I had Kathy send out to everyone, and I hope it's also in your red folder, a resolution in support of achieving election law enforcement in New York State by creation of an independent election law enforcement agency. And I'd like to move that for addition.
Is there a second to adding it to the agenda? Nathan Shinagawa. That takes 10 votes. So all those in favor of adding that to the agenda?
Oh, I was going to talk about it.
When we come to it. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Anything else to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? All right, let's take the consent agenda. Resolutions will be voted on as a group, as we know, unless someone wants to take it off and have it discussed and vote on it in the regular agenda. From the Public Safety Committee, Resolution A.
Off.
Resolution B, which is ID 4556, authorization to accept an award of a grant for the benefit of the drug courts of Tompkins County. Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution C, ID 4601, budget adjustment and transfer of funds to Health Homes Care Coordination Program out of the Mental Health Department. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution D, authorization to execute a 5-year agreement with the Unified Court System for the provision of cleaning and maintenance services at the main courthouse. From the Economic Development Committee, Resolution E, ID 4573, authorization to contract with the United Way of Tompkins County for 2014 online tourism grant management services. Is there a resolution on the consent agenda? Kathy Luz Herrera, is there?
Sir?
Oh, yes, we have some appointments.
Thank you.
to the Workforce Investment Board, I think we already said Jeffrey Madison, local education representative. To the Planning Advisory Board, Chris Alcher, the education representative. Todd Bittner, natural environmental representative. David Herrick, infrastructure utilities representative. David Kay, urban area representative. Robert Suitville, built environment design representative. The Environmental Management Council, Spring Buck, at-large representative. Office of the Aging, Satomi Hill. To the Youth Services Board, Angela Sullivan, Karen Nacera, Gabe Shapiro. To the Mental Health Subcommittee, Paula Winner. To the Stop DWI Advisory Board, Sonia Seaman. To the Criminal Justice Advisory Alternatives to Incarceration Board, Jason Leifer. To the Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, Diane Bruns. To the Homeownership Oversight Committee, Rick Snyder. I believe that's all of those. Could I have a motion, Kathy? You started, and was there a second? Seconded by Leslin. On the consent agenda, all those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Let's go to the standing committees. I'd like to reorder just slightly and wondered if Will Burbank would go first tonight. I know he has a presentation as part of his report.
Oh, thank you.
That's the Economic Development Committee, by the way.
It is indeed. So the Economic Development Committee met on January 7th, and we had two substantive topical discussions. The first was we heard two folks from Cornell, Tom Schreiber and Caitlin Schickel, come and talk about the Startup New York program, which, of course, is the governor's one of the governor's attempts to revitalize the economy of our state. And what they were presenting was the sort of plan that they have drafted to comply with the requirements of this program. And they explained to us the process and the fact that it's going to, at this point, linking businesses with various departments and colleges, trying to leverage the academic work and utilize a series of properties that have been identified that would comply with the requirements of the program. And other committee members who were there, maybe you can help me. You sort of explained it that from Cornell's perspective at this point, it's primarily a question of real estate. They're trying to figure out where it would work. The idea of the plan is one of job creation. And they wanted to get in and have a chance at being at the table as this rolls out. They indicated there was at least one company that they had expressed some interest, but that was our report from them. We expressed concern based on a memo that Ed Marks had drafted having to do with some of the specific properties that were identified, specifically the one off Pine Tree Road. They promised us that there would be an openness to working with the community, and that these were not set in stone, but this was the first whack. We also briefly discussed the two other economic development initiatives of the state, which of course was the hotspot, which is still kind of informative stages, which will be a regional project. And the incubator project, which when we were having our meeting, they had not yet identified where that would be, but we have since read from the Ithaca Journal that last week that they've identified a site. It's going to be downtown, and it will be in the old Carey building. So that's an exciting new addition to our community. The other presentation we had was from Sue Stafford from TC3, who came to talk with us about the college's Farm to Bistro initiative. And that's where we're going to try a new thing, because I'm actually going to play playing a little video, that a piece of it that she showed us that explains what they're envisioning. And let's see, are we ready to roll on that?
It's like it's lighting up, so okay. When you say go,
okay,
there it's going.
There you go.
TC3 is launching a groundbreaking new Farm to Bistro initiative that is teaching students the skills they need to be competitive in today's marketplace. Students from our new sustainable farming and food systems and a new state-of-the-art culinary arts program will get hands-on experience with the entire food system, including planning, growing, marketing, distributing, preparing, and presenting. These new programs will require a unique infrastructure to support them, and it all starts at the TC3 Organic Farm.
Plans are to have a mixed fruit and vegetable farm, primarily vegetables grown organically, doing a small orchard, and it is going to be a production level farm. The food will be grown to provide for the bistro and also the dining hall, maybe a small CSA, potentially working with other restaurants in the community. The ultimate goal is to have the farm have as much renewable energy as possible, have a windmill, have some solar energy, some solar panels, so, you know, using the electricity on the farm would be generated by renewable energy.
Located adjacent to the Dryden campus, the farm provides the ideal opportunity for students to experience food production at a human-scaled local level. This dynamic field lab and classroom will also enrich the curriculum in agriculture, biology, environmental study, and many other classes. Along with the farm, TC3's new culinary center called Cultivare will be built in downtown Ithaca. Cultivare will support the educational mission of Farm to Bistro with teaching labs and real-world experience for students in a live restaurant setting. The restaurant will feature a seasonal menu sourced with local ingredients. Cultivare will also feature flexible event space and tasting room with offerings from local area beverage producers. TC3 is set up in a great location to fulfill the needs for a variety of local businesses and provide students with a skill set that can take them anywhere in the country. With the organic sustainable farm and a state-of-the-art culinary center like Cultivare, TC3 will offer education for these industries that no other community college is currently providing. It will take a great deal of support to provide quality education, economic growth, community engagement, and a future in food. Your contribution will make the difference.
So as you probably are aware, this project got a big boost when they received a grant from the state for $300,000, which gives it a considerable way toward the total cost. But it's not completely decided yet that it will be moving forward. They will be formally deciding that at a meeting at the TC3 Foundation on the 28th, but it's looking very, very promising. And the restaurant component is envisioned to be in the space that would partially, I gather, include the former wine center across from the former Holiday Inn in downtown Ithaca. So that's two things we talked about, and I don't know if there are any questions.
Okay, I think I saw Nathan's hand first, then Kathy. And Peter?
Answer my question.
Okay.
Kathy?
Thanks. This sounds like an exciting project, and I've read a little bit of the PR about it. I bet, knowing me, Will, you can anticipate a couple of my questions, but I'll frame them for you. I respect the TC3 Foundation. When I heard the words adjacent to the TC3 campus, I wondered if the situation will be, as has been in similar cases, that the buildings and contracting for this, instead of being prevailing wage, which they would be if it was on TC3 campus, will not be handled that way. And similarly, I'm interested in knowing if the downtown building will also use prevailing wage and if it'll be using local labor and contributing to our local economy that way. It's great that they're talking about a contribution, and in the context of us talking about property taxes, I think it's a great time to note that local economic development is really begun at the base when people hire local and when they pay a decent living wage. And certainly with farm workers and construction workers that work, you know, out in the field and grading roads and things like that, we consider the notion of paying prevailing wage something that's desirable. So I don't know if you can answer those questions, but I sure hope you'll pass my concerns on to the TC3 Foundation, and if they'll be willing to give you an answer about the adjacent property and if there'll be concerns addressed about that, because in the past the apartments, for example, were built on adjacent property, but then later it was incorporated onto the onto the TC2 campus, which was unfortunate because if it had been on the TC3 campus to begin with, those properties would have had to have been built prevailing wage.
Okay. Well, I'd be happy to work with you to convey the answers to both those questions. They're very, very good.
Peter?
Just an observation. I came to Ithaca in 1956, which to many of you will sound like the Middle Ages. When we came here, it turns out that the thing that you're describing for TC3 was an integral part of the Cornell campus. And that was a time when Cornell taught students the same thing that TC3 is now teaching students, namely how to do the food services industry. Mm-hmm. And the students, the Cornell students, bought and made recipes and cooked and served and so on and so forth. But it was a wonderful addition to the community. It was reserved for, you won't believe this, but male Cornell faculty members. Females were not allowed to join. Believe it or not, 1956. There was a wonderful place for families. When we had small children, we used to bring them there all the time. And the food was delicious and inexpensive. And I'm looking forward to repeating my life again.
Great.
Thank you. Anything else? Martha, sorry.
So the wives of the faculty could come, but not the...
They could come as a guest, but they could not be a member, okay?
Why did they ever stop that?
So now I'm really hungry.
We got to get out of here.
Now I'm really hungry. Wasn't there also a very significant gift by...
You're right.
Okay.
And I'm...
Like, Art Kukis?
Yeah. Yes, you're right. I don't remember the math.
Something like $1 million or so. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, thank you. More.
Was it more?
Yes.
Was it 2 million?
I think so.
2 million. Credit where credit.
But they're still taking more gifts, so.
All right. 2 million from Art Kukis, who's already donated millions towards the student. Mike, you know, the student support program.
I'll think of the name in just a second.
Right, okay.
Yes, I know the student support program.
Thanks.
We're going to take just half a second and put the screens up before we go to the next committee.
While it's going on, Mike, if I might say that...
I want to wait for the screens to go up before we... So if the background noise goes away.
Okay. It's customary to end a report announcing the date of the next committee meeting, which unfortunately at this juncture I'm not sure what it will be because it would it's still in flux, so stay tuned.
It'll be on the website, as will this video eventually that we looked at tonight. Let's go ahead. Peter, were you trying to say something?
Yeah, I would just one sentence for those who might be curious. When a group of hotheads, including myself, complained about this discrimination against females, we were female professors, we were given an explanation. And the explanation was to keep the quality of the conversation at a high level, we had to exclude females. So help me God, okay?
Let's not go there any further, please. Okay. Let's go to the, back to the top of the committees. So the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Carol Chalk.
Well, I don't have a report. I mean, you know, we haven't met since... Well, we did meet this afternoon
right,
at 5
no
o'clock.
Report, we'll go on.
And we also don't have a definite next meeting time, even if it's at the time that is, that our staff listed on this sheet. For our first meeting, it would conflict with the NYSAC conference. So hopefully members of the committee, we may need to meet twice in February. Ed Marks has already informed me that he may have some brief business we need to do before our next legislature meeting, and then we'd have to schedule a temporary date. I did want to pick back up, with your permission, on what I withdrew during privilege of the floor, because I had a question. Mike Sigler, you talked about the state forest,
yes.
And that's something that I've followed, and we've talked just a little bit about the fact that that was in the works. And what you may not know is that the single last unmet goal of the strategic tourism planning, strategic tourism plan from the last plan 10 years ago that carried over, along with lots of other goals, to the new plan was more lake access and waterfront kinds of activities, as well as more just public land. And it would be and then the other thing that the plan is doing is increasing recreational activities. So some of us were very excited to hear that NYSEG and the state were working on, was it 200 acres?
It has to be 500 acres to be a state.
500 acres.
485,
Of recreational land.
Well, hopefully it won't all be recreational. That's the thing. Hopefully some of it will remain farming.
Farming.
That's what the use agreement's all about, is you have to lay out the uses that you're going to allow.
Okay. Well, I would appreciate it. It just, if you could make sure that the rest of us know when the time actually ends up being.
Well, it's definitely 3 o'clock on Friday.
3 o'clock on Friday, and then
it should last till about six.
Should
last till about six. DC, the person from DC will be there from like 3 to 4:30. I kind of had to base the meeting around him. I mean, Ken Lynch, you know, State DC. It's nice to get them down here. But Andy will be there too, and so will Jay, and I'll be there, and some town board members.
Okay, so I was just thinking that I don't know that I can be there, but Ed Marks, Tom Knight. Well, I was going to ask staff if they could make sure that Ed, Tom Knipe, I don't know if there are other recreational related people.
This will be the first of many.
County,
so if they
to,
can, great. If they can't,
can you take that up?
Be able to hear it. Well the reason that it's important.
Commissioner of Planning?
The reason that I think it's important for us is that the discussion tonight, I'd never heard the part of the discussion that is maybe we still want to collect some taxes or payments of some sort, and with the whether this is enough of a public purpose that we've been trying to achieve for a long time that might not have been party to.
Carol, you're going to chair the committee again this year. Can you take that on to make sure folks know about this?
Well, yes, but if decisions are being made on Friday, I thought our staff should know. That's all. So, yes.
Well, there's no decision
and,
Friday.
And it's not
just a public hearing.
Okay.
The town's already supporting it as a state forest. So.
The town is supporting it.
They passed a resolution end of the year.
And then can I ask what you had in mind in terms of sort of continued payments or?
Well, we could be part of the pilot. The towns are going to try to do a pilot. State forests generally are. You get under a pilot. That's how a lot of the other state forests are run.
Okay.
State park, you don't get anything. Nobody gets anything.
Okay.
But forests and wild life management areas, you can do.
Other questions for Carol?
Thank you very much.
This is for Mike Sigler via Carol. You just called the Friday meeting a public hearing.
Yes.
Does that mean there'll be a stenographer taking notes, or do you just mean a public meeting?
more of a public meeting.
Thank you.
I'm going to see. I would like to get minutes taken because that seemed to be very helpful with the last informational meeting. Let me talk to the town.
Hearing is an official term. That's why I was
doing that. I understand. I mean, we did the notice and everything. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Carol.
So, and I don't know if there are other questions. I could, you know, Ed Marks has a very exciting program for the upcoming year, and the things that you mentioned I really appreciated. Because we have some important decisions to make coming up. So it should be a good year.
Thanks, Carol. Look forward to it. Can we move on to budget, capital, and personnel?
We can. Thank you very much. My first item is that on January 27th, we will be having the first meeting of the new old budget committee. I have the same members, and I'm so happy about that. And we're on the 27th from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And I also got a text message from my wife, and she's in New York City, and she is watching this meeting. So I know there are two viewers because one of my grandchildren, Charlie and Josie, are also watching. So that means they're not voters, but they're learning about local government. So I appreciate the fact they're watching. Other than that, I said earlier, I think I'm very happy that the resolution passed about Joe's master's thesis that he's going to be moving on with. And I think it's important that NYSAC hears it and other New York State officials hear what Tompkins County is thinking about. I look forward to the budget committee for 2014 and... At this point, we will just move forward, and first meeting is Monday, and thank you all for listening.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Jim? Jim, I can report that my brother in Florida, my brother Tom, is also
listening. All right. Oh, wow. We're going nationwide.
Wow. Popular.
Going viral.
Public Safety Committee, Brian Robison.
Thanks, Mike. And I know my wife is home, and I'm pretty sure she's not watching. and I'll be there sometime. I didn't get a chance when she was here, but I wanted to also do a public welcome to Christina Dravis, our new dispatch center manager. I can tell you that it is true that she hit the ground running. If you remember, one of the positions that we also approved was kind of I almost term it a liaison position. It's a quality assurance person, but it's kind of a person that is the go-between between the center itself and our consumers, police chiefs, fire chiefs, that sort of thing. When they have a problem or a concern with the center, and so we had an ECRAC meeting last Wednesday, very well attended, and she was introduced there as well. And after the meeting, I went up to Brian Wilbur and I said, "Hey, nothing for nothing, but if you can kind of, you know, we'd like to get this." Component, if you will, going, and he didn't get a chance to say anything to her. The next day, she came in with a sample job description of that very position. So she's very aware of what's going on. I've also spoken with not only Lee but some of the other dispatchers that are there, and they're very, very impressed with her. So I want to publicly thank Peter, who was very involved in the selection process. And it was another example where we at Tompkins County did not settle. There was a little bit of a hiccup in her interview, but we were persistent and got her back here. And I truly believe that we got the right person. And I think... some of our concerns about that that we all had at one time or another should be going away. I'm very hopeful of that.
Brian,
yes.
For the people at home, will you tell us what ECROC is the acronym for?
I have no idea. No.
Is it the Emergency Response Operations?
Emergency
Communications. ECR. Response Operations Center.
It's the Emergency Committee, and it's a big group of folks from emergency services throughout the county.
Yep, there's a lot of cops, a lot of firefighters, and emergency medical folks. And it all has to do with their interactions as it pertains to the dispatch function within the county. So I did want to get that out there. Looking forward to this year, again, as the chair of this committee. I know that it's kind of a hot seat, which is fine. That's all right. We do have a big issue that we're still dealing with. True to our word, we are in the midst of trying to devise a mechanism for to look at several issues as they pertain to the jail and the jail population. We've had meetings already. None of this will be rolled out until it's brought to the Public Safety Committee. And I'm also going to be speaking with CJATI tomorrow. They have a meeting. That would be Criminal Justice Alternatives to Incarceration. Obviously, they're a big part of that discussion. Not only the staff people, but we're going to be leaning on folks from outside of staff, the public. We want that interaction. We will probably be dusting off the study done, I think it was 2007, dealing with some of these same issues of reentry and transitional issues, recidivism, that sort of thing. We promise that, and we will do that in some form, and we're still trying to figure that out. We did have a meeting on January 10th, and a lot of it was some of the same issues you heard today under privilege of the floor. And again, we allowed public input there, and you know, we always will. Having said that, I think there was one resolution that was pulled off.
Yes, so let me ask if there are questions for you, Brian, first, and then if okay. not, I'd like you to move Resolution A.
Okay. Any questions? Julie?
I have a question on Resolution B, which passed on the consent agenda. It refers to there being subcontracts. Most of the money being transferred is for subcontracts, and I wondered if you could give me some idea of what that's about or with whom.
That's the grant for the drug courts.
No.
Okay.
But we will try to find that out.
Yeah, we can. Pat Buchelt, Joe, do you remember?
Most of it goes to support staff. I mean, this is the drug court operation. So the foundation provides $15,000 a year to support staff. There may be specialized services that are subcontracts. I can find those out for you. This is now becoming a recurring grant, so it's kind of in the rhythm of the program. But tomorrow I can get you all the contracts. I'll get you where all the money is being spent for that.
Thank you, Jim.
There's no great rush. I'm just curious.
Yeah,
thank you.
Not a problem.
Brian, would you move Resolution A, please?
Yeah, if there are no further questions, I would move Resolution A, ID 4582, authorization to accept Triad Foundation donation and budget adjustment in the Sheriff's Office.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Leslie.
And somebody pulled it.
Is there a question from someone? Yeah. Who asked for it to come off?
I asked for it to come off. I had already...
done some calling around and spoken to people today about it, so I don't have any further questions.
Okay. Dooley?
Well, I didn't pull it off, but I'm curious about tasers. What is an upgraded taser as opposed to the present taser?
I think I can take a stab at this.
Joe?
Here.
Well, I did talk to Ken today, so if you want.
No, go ahead.
Ken explains that the current generation of tasers is reaching the end of its useful life, that it's the manufacturer has said that it's not going to be supporting that model of taser anymore. So replacement parts, this is almost like what we deal with computers. Replacement parts are going to be hard to get. So what this grant will do is to help begin replacing the older tasers with newer ones. Dooley had asked me some questions about this, too. She asked whether there were additional features on these tasers as compared to the other ones. Ken wasn't aware of any new features. He says that with every generation, they become more reliable, probably more durable. But he wasn't aware of any new features on these. And I know the question has come up as well about whether the sheriff's office has policies governing the use of the tasers. And the sheriff did tell me that they do indeed have policies, and they train their deputies on the use of tasers consistent with those policies.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, just to add to that, it had always been my experience that anytime you upgrade a piece of equipment like that, there's a training component that goes with it. You know, regardless of if you've had training under the old equipment or not.
Thank you.
So I'm guessing that that's part of this cost.
Are we ready to vote? All those in favor of Resolution A, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? Carol and Will are opposed.
And the next meeting will be Monday, February 10th at 3:30. Here.
Let's proceed to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean, Claiborne Chair.
Thank you. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet tomorrow and will continue in the new year to meet on the fourth Wednesday of the month, 3:30, at the Old Jail Conference Room, unless we change it to here. But at this point, we're meeting next door. WDIC is excited about what we are planning on doing this year, and that begins with rolling out just for information purposes and to be able to answer any questions to our entire workforce, the diversity policy that was passed by this body. So we start tomorrow with the assessment department, and we'll be visiting all our departments throughout the next few months at the staff meetings to have an opportunity just to bring awareness to the policy and make sure that all of our workforce sees it and would have an opportunity to ask questions on it. That's my report.
Thank you, Leslie. Questions for Leslie? Health and Human Services Committee, Kathy Luz Herrera, Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no report. However, it looks as though the Health and Human Services Committee will be continuing to meet on the second Tuesday, which would make that February 11th. But if that changes, I'm sure you'll find out. As a longstanding vice chair of Health and Human Services, I want to welcome Peter Stein to the committee and will assist him in his new role on the committee as chair. And I encourage everyone else on the committee to do so. And like I say, I'm not quite sure if that's going to be the meeting date, but I'm sure that Peter will announce it at the appropriate time.
Thank you. Questions for Kathy?
Well, that is the meeting date as far as I'm concerned. I think we've all agreed that that was an okay time.
Thank you, Peter. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Peter?
I have no report since there was no meeting since the last time we met, so I have nothing to say. I welcome Kathy as the new chair, and we'll be pleased to work with her on the committee.
Thank you. Looks like we're meeting at the same time.
It.
Great.
Yes, same I time? Believe it. It meets at the same time. Yeah.
Great. So that'll be February 17th. From.
I guess so.
10:30 to 12:30.
Yeah.
Jim?
Kathy, are we going to meet here?
I'd like to. I think the facilities allow for better accessibility for everybody.
Thank you.
February 17th is a holiday, so we just have that's the only one where that's true during the year. But I'm looking at this calendar. It's at President's Day, so we might need to.
Well, after we get done with the meeting, hopefully folks will stay around a little while so we can iron out some of these issues.
We Pete called first dibs, so overlapping members need to come here first. Thank you.
Okay. Government Operations Committee, I was vice chair last year, and we have not met since the last meeting, so there's no report.
Mr. Chair, may I just briefly add one thing to the Workforce Diversity Committee report?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
We are looking for new members on our committee. I encourage my legislature colleagues, if anyone would like to join the WDIC, to please let us know and fill out the required form. Pam McAsey was a member of the committee, and so was Pat Pryor, who are both no longer here, and so we'd really love to have another representatives from this body join us as well.
I'd like to add my voice to encourage folks to volunteer for that. Julie Kiefer, your resolution was added to the agenda. Would you like to move it?
Yes, I would like to move it. It has ID number 4611. Again, the title is In Support of Achieving Election Law Enforcement in New York State by Creation of an Independent Election Law Enforcement Agency.
Is there a second? Peter Stein. Julie, would you like to present why you brought this forward?
Yes, I read the League of Women Voters monthly bulletin. They had filled it out by sticking in one page of excerpts from the Moreland Commission report, the interim report to the governor. And there are lots of things in there that one can get very exercised about and interested in. I decided to focus on the Board of Elections one because it was so blatantly in need of help. And reading the sections of the report dealing with the Board of Elections at the state level, it's clear that although they seem able to run elections, they seem incapable of enforcing election law. And that's why the resolution goes into the amount of detail it does, to give you the same sense that was in the report. I wanted to add it to the resolution today so that if the legislature here endorses it, it can then go with us to NYSAC and be sent to NYSAC actually ahead of time and maybe go through one of their Monday committee meetings and become actually a part of the packet that NYSAC looks at this year.
So. Julie, for the benefit of folks at home, would you please read the resolved?
Yes. Resolved that the Tompkins County Legislature, recognizing the interests of its residents, strongly endorses the creation of an independent election law enforcement agency as described and recommended by the Moreland Commission in its December 2nd, 2013 report to the governor.
Thank you. Questions for Dooley? Kathy Lou Herrera.
Hi, Dooley. Hi, everybody. I want to explain to people why I voted against this. There's an assumption in this that's stated at least once, 1, 2, 3, 4, in the fifth whereas. And what it seems to me to do is to demonize partisanship. Personally, I don't believe that partisanship is a bad thing. I think it's our right, our free right to exercise different perspectives and different opinions on how laws are carried out. What I believe the problem is that when people with different partisan ideas
become gridlocked because of whatever their reason is, and they won't move forward on it. In some cases, and this could be true at the state level, there's a, and certainly we've seen examples of it at the federal level, there's a problem with regard to party discipline being enforced so that people feel that their position won't be able to be retained unless they do as they're told by the party bosses. Now, we don't have that problem here in Tompkins County. We've had a bipartisan support of a number of things. But I believe that the focus is on the wrong problem. I think the problem is not partisanship. I think the problem is people being extorted by their party leadership to not do or to do something out of fear of not being reelected, reappointed, et cetera. And that is not partisanship. To me, that has to do with a kind of a internal paralysis that we see all the time at the federal level when things are strictly voted down a party line. I believe that there's a misconception at the basis of this that could lead, for example, to saying that our local board of elections should not be equitably divided, which I believe our local board of elections does a tremendous job, not just running elections, but in other ways, and they are appointed in a way that is partisan. It works when you don't enforce party discipline or whatever other malfeasance occurs at other levels. My concern is that we start equating being a member of a party or holding to partisan views as being the problem. And it even states that in this whereas. It says, the law does not require party-based appointments for other board employees. However, the board has adopted internal policies that replicate this partisan pairing throughout the organization with the result that lack of bipartisan agreement results in inaction. This bipartisan structure has effectively led to a tacit bipartisan agreement to do nothing. Now, it may be true that the state board of elections is doing nothing, but I believe it's not due to partisanship. It's due to enforcement of party partisanship roles and due to fear of not being elected. And we've seen, I won't say a particular party that doesn't rhyme with coffee, but it has enforced a certain party boundaries on people that if they don't vote according to a strict ideological point of view, they will be driven out of office. We don't, I believe, and I would like to hope it stays this way, have that here in Tompkins County. But my fear is that by pushing this forward at the state level, we're sending a message that we believe that partisanship is in and of itself unhealthy and wrong. So lest anybody think I'm not for reform, I am. But I also support healthy partisanship. I'll be voting no on this.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Kathy, but I think what we actually have at the moment are traditions which have made the enforcement of voting law impossible. I mean, we have Republican judges and we have Democratic judges, and I know that it works pretty well that when you have the judge that belongs to a party and has to make an adjudication about election law in general, they do reasonable things, not always, but in general. But I have since learned by example and that the kind of reasonableness that makes the Republican and Democratic election commissioners in Tompkins County work to enforce the law in a reasonable way does not work in many, many, and perhaps the majority of election districts in the counties. I think that they have turned into simply the expectation is that those people will vote on a decision of whether or not to accept a particular ruling, not by the facts, but by who is helped by it. And I think it's just turned into a bad system, and that I very much support this, saying that that the only way to cure it that I can think of is to say have somebody independent making those particular decisions. So I am going to support this. I think it's an excellent excellent resolution.
Tim Dennis.
I will support it also. And I listened to what Dooley said, and I've read this and actually researched a little. And it feels like to me it's an agency that kind of steps on their toes, each other's toes all the time. And they really don't get anywhere. And it, you have to, my sense is that you have to try to do something to break that logjam. And I'm not even certain it's because of Dem and Republican. It's like these people don't want to do their job. And the best way to show somebody they don't want to do their job, that they're not doing their job, is suggest another way to do it. And they may have an answer for you. So I would certainly support that.
Carol Chalk?
Yeah, I have a question and then a recommendation. Why would I get the recommendation first? I was going to recommend that that we agree, that we actually have in our own resolved some of the conclusions of the Moreland Commission. And I would recommend starting that with the word concluding. At the bottom of page 1, the second to last whereas, that very last line, there's a word concluding. So I would, the whereas would be, I think it may be appropriate, and the human and special investigators, state troopers, resources for enforcement, page 11. And then I'd put in, now therefore be it resolved that the Tompkins County Legislature agrees with the conclusions of the Moreland Commission that our state needs an independent professional watchdog for our elections and campaign finance laws, and recommends and agrees with the commission recommendation to create, and that whole last whereas.
Carol, I think you're suggesting an amendment, but it's got me confused, and I assume other folks are a little bit confused here. Are you asking, do you want to rewrite the resolved? Is that what you want to do?
Yes. Does that work?
Well, I guess.
Is that friendly?
You're either going to have to get it.
I couldn't follow you, Carol.
Okay. I would just start the resolved, now therefore be it resolved, that the Tompkins County Legislature agrees with the recommendations of the Moreland Commission that, and I would start with what your exact wording here, that starts with our state needs an independent professional watchdog for our elections and campaign finance laws, which is the last line of the 7th whereas, and recommends creating, and we'd make that whole last whereas into a resolved, and further resolves that the Tompkins County Legislature, recognizing the interests of its residents, just as you have it here.
Let me take the pause.
If that's not friendly, it doesn't need to happen.
I just would like to say, let's just float this. Is anybody interested in seconding that kind of an amendment at this point? I'm not seeing that.
Well, then I will withdraw that, and I will just ask my question.
All right.
I am not as familiar with this part of the Moreland Commission's recommendation. I'm impressed with the sections that I am more familiar with. So my only concern about it is that we just haven't had enough time to go and look into it. Can you or anybody else tell me if there's anybody out there in the state opposing this recommendation of the Moreland Commission, this part of it about elections, and suggesting something else instead?
I haven't heard
an organized effort.
It hasn't been out there long enough, and I haven't heard of anything, but it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Okay. Well, I'm impressed enough with the rest of this and with the parts I'm reading here that I would support this.
I want to get anyone who hasn't spoken first, and I want to come back to Kathy. Jim, did you want to speak?
Jim already spoke.
No.
He did already spoke? I'm sorry, you did already speak. And then it would have been Kathy's turn.
Thank you. I'm also not as familiar with this, and I agree that it hasn't been out there that long. I accept the contention that there's an urgency to pass it, although that's somewhat tenuous. What I'd like to ask is that I'll make a motion, 1, 2, 3, 4, that the 5th and 6th entire whereases be taken out, If they are, I can agree to this. I'm not that crazy about having to vote for it, so I have no problem with voting against it. But if you were to do that, I could vote for this. I think that it's a little bit, for of us, it's going out on a limb for us to have such an indictment of the party system that we are passing on from our legislature to the state legislature. I believe that these generalizations could easily be extrapolated to say they apply to all party systems, and I believe that that's a dangerous precedent for us to set. I think that it would be easier for us to talk about agreeing with endorsing the creation of an independent election law enforcement agency as described and recommended by the Moreland Commission, but to specifically, out of context, take those statements talking about this party divide limits the flow of information, breeds hostility, and undermines cooperation. I just believe it's a tone that I don't want to set, and I'd rather not support. So if someone would be willing to second my motion to remove the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th, and 6th whereases from this, I'll be able to...
Is there a second for that amendment? Mike Sigler. Discussion on the amendment. Mike?
I like everything Kathy said, but I like what Jim said, too, because you got to start somewhere, and this seems to be an appropriate place to start. I mean, really, just accepting the report, I think, would be enough. But my trouble here is, I guess, the report is very alien to me, because this has not been my experience in Tompkins. I'm going by faith that what you say is, in other counties, this is kind of the way it is. In this county, that simply hasn't been my experience. So that's where I'm coming at. And I liked everything Kathy said. So if we could remove those, that would be great.
On the amendment, Brian?
No, not on the amendment.
Okay. Other people want to speak on the amendment. Dooley?
I would like to be able to accept this as friendly, but I don't think it is. The quotations are documented, and they're from the report, and they're conclusory, and they're very damning, and I think that it doesn't strike me that we are stirring anything up. We are simply publicizing the commission's analysis. The partisanship that Kathy and then Peter have been speaking about, I don't experience it locally either. It's not an indictment so much of local boards of election at all as it is of what has happened at the state level. I don't know if you all remember when our local board of election tried very hard to comply with HAVA, wanted to get voting machines, and at the state level, things were stymied so often that things kept getting pushed later and later. If you look at the information in your packet, you will see that staff printed out a colored chart. And if you look at it, you see tiny print. So many of those positions are vacant, which says to me that there is not an attempt to even take seriously the enforcement mechanism. The parties aren't even appointing people. And that is the party's choice at the state level. And it's hurting local officials who can't get their complaints handled. So I would not prefer these to be taken out. I don't want these taken out.
On the amendment, Peter Stein.
I will not vote for it. I will vote for keeping it the way it's written. I think that it makes an argument as to why one is recommending making a drastic change. There has to be a good reason why you're making a drastic change, and this is that the one that we have at the moment isn't working. And so I think it's important to have that in there.
I'm going to speak and say that I will support the amendment because I think this resolution is very important, and I think it ought to be unanimous if possible. Let's see. I think Jim was ahead of you, Kathy. Jim, then Kathy.
Okay. I'm looking at the colored chart in the back, and there might be a good explanation why nothing gets done at the state level. Two-thirds of the jobs are vacant.
That's right.
And, you know, it's shocking.
So, all right. On the amendment, Kathy.
Thank you. I appreciate the comments that are made, and I'll just say that I believe, and I'll say this again, but I think that the conclusion that's being come to is the wrong one, and that it's not logical to say that this is caused by partisanship. At the national government level, we're dealing with a situation where judges and other appointees are not being moved through. Many could argue that it's partisanship, and yet I believe that the cause is enforcement of party discipline, a rigorous enforcement of the need to vote exactly the way that someone is told to by their party bosses. And if not, their committee chairmanships are taken away, their special assignments are taken away, their opportunity to move forward certain bills is taken away. And this is, I believe, what causes the paralysis. We're approaching, I think, the problem the wrong way. We're naming the wrong thing. And I believe that by doing this, we're covering up the problem. And if it exists at the national level and if it exists at the state level, what is to stop it from existing at local levels? It does in some other communities. So I believe we need to name the elephant in the room. At the very least, we need to not blame something that is not actually the problem. So I understand that many people couldn't stomach this. I won't vote for it if these two aren't taken out, because I believe it's pointing at the wrong problem, and I think this could actually come back to bite us.
I'd like to vote on the amendment, please. All those in favor of the amendment, which is to delete the fifth and sixth whereases, all those in favor, please raise your hand. That's three. Those opposed? That should be 11. That fails 3-11. Now we're back on the main motion. Brian, did you want to speak on the main motion?
Well, just that, you know, I kind of view this a little bit like the presentation we saw from county administration today. And it's simply to begin the discussion. You know, I've read enough outside of this to know that it's actually good that there are as many vacant positions that there are in this, because they had staff investigators that investigated two cases in 3 years. Why are you having these people there? So at least they're not doing that. I don't think it's so much. I think a lot of things get handled locally by the local folks here. This is very much the state level, and it is. It's dysfunctional. So the idea of having independent investigation and oversight of the rules of election makes a lot of sense.
Are we ready to vote on the main motion? Those in favor of the resolution, Dooley's resolution, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That passes 13-1.
Mike?
I'm sorry. Yes, Martha?
I'd just like to thank Dooley for... Did you write this?
Yes.
Thank you for writing it and bringing it to us.
I agree.
Welcome.
Before we take the minutes, I just want to remind committees that we're going to meet afterwards to try to iron out any scheduling details. And please, chairs, report to Kathy Covert once it's been decided when you're going to meet so she can get it on the schedule. Someone want to move the minutes of January 2nd?
Move.
Moved by Leslin McBean Claiborne, seconded by Brian.
Great minutes.
Discussion? All those in favor of the minutes?
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. Any unfinished business? We have a motion to adjourn.
Move.
Jim Dennis, seconded by Peter Stein. Those in favor of adjourning?
Aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you, everyone.
Nice job, Mike.
Yep, thank you.
Okay.